to start our meeting. We'll be starting really shortly. Yeah. Friday meeting that we have convened to get a briefing from the ministry with regards to where we are with the vaccine program. We would like to thank you very much for making this special time, because you recall in our last meeting we said that we'll try, because these meetings are regular every fortnight, that we don't block the Wednesday meetings that are in there. I would like your indulgence towards the end of the meeting. If Ms. Majalamba has not already sent, I didn't see it in my emails. I haven't checked my emails. The program that we worked with her yesterday, that should have gone to the members yesterday. We will talk to it if it is not already there. She will talk to it if she has already sent it. I might not have seen it myself, but I know it about what we discussed with her. On the platform from the ministry, I see Mr. Joe Hartler, or the deputy minister. I see the deputy minister. I see the DG is joined, Dr. Telezi. I welcome them. And then they will probably, okay, I'll come to that part. I did get a call last night from the minister, indicating his extreme challenges in terms of being able to be part of this meeting. And he indicated to me that he would have the deputy minister leading the delegation. And if time allows in his schedule that is really tight, he will then be able to join. But so long now we have a deputy minister leading the delegation. From our side, Ms. Majalamba, can I get an indication of the members who have joined in, and apologies if there are any?
Excuse me, Chairperson. Chairperson?
Yes, Dr. Susan, Dr. Namtembiwan.
I just want to find out. We needed the presence of the minister today. That is the reason why we have this special meeting, because certain questions need him. He needs to respond to the questions that are directed to him. So I think there's a problem here. Can we talk about
it? Let us wait until I hear. I did indicate that for now, the delegation is led by the deputy minister. There will be time for the deputy minister to speak to us on that matter when he introduces the delegation, then you can take it from there, okay? Ms. Majalamba.
Morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Dlomo, Mr. Munyai, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Jacobs, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Kwahube, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Ms. Sukers, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. I've received an apology from Mr. Van Staden. He won't be able to join today's meeting. Thank you, Chair.
I'm present, Chair. I'm here, Chair. Honorable Keller.
Okay.
And Honorable Wilson is also online, Chair.
Honorable Wilson is also present. I was just checking my and the Honorable Harvard, Dr. Harvard, where you did you mention her, Ms. Majalamba?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so two new ones that we didn't have. Honorable Kela, Honorable Wilson. Thank you very much. We have our staff. Deputy Minister, I see you so long here with the DG, Dr. Telezi. Can you then introduce the delegation that you have? Introduce the delegation and therefore give us the progress on when we could expect the minister, but so long we will start the meeting. We will start the meeting with what you have just explained to us. And the presentation that we have, which we have received, is known to us and to the minister. Engaging the minister on questions may not probably be a challenge as we start, as we got on with the meeting. But let me hear you so long.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. With me is the DG and also as our support staff from the Ministry and the Department. As Honorable Chair has indicated that the Honorable Minister had to have some engagements in the KZN province. There were some urgent matters which he needed to address in the province, so he is unable to be with us this morning, and he has asked me to, in his place, to lead the delegation, which will be making the presentation. I can maybe just ask the DG to give the specifics of the rest of the delegation. With your indulgence, Honorable Chairperson.
Yes, Dr. Telezi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, my Deputy Minister. With us, we've been led by our Deputy Minister, and then we've got Mr. Khatla, who's our PLO. We've got Dr. Tulare, who's one of the senior official in the department, who's well known to the committee. And then we've got Ms. Ngubo, who's technical head of my office that joined the department. That is the team. And when the time is right, the deputy minister will introduce the presentation and I will lead the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. With that information, may I request honorable members to really support that the meeting goes on without the minister starting the meeting with us. It will not be for the first time that the minister joins us halfway in the presentation and answers questions. But even if questions are not answered by the minister, the leadership of the deputy minister will be there. If questions, this is an update. It's not like we would have wanted to have this as the only day. So I request that the meeting goes on. Whatever might be outstanding, if there will be, it's something that will be noted, and we will always have a chance to get the minister to respond later or when he joins. I would really request that we support the meeting going on. You could imagine if on the basis of the minister not being able to be leading the delegation, I then sent you an information that the meeting is cancelled, when we already have officials led by Deputy Minister who would engage us on this presentation. May I request that we go on with the meeting? May I just go through that point before I make other additional opening remarks? Can we allow the meeting to proceed led by the Deputy Minister?
Honourable Wilson, Chair.
Yes, Honourable Wilson.
Chair, yeah, I think it's very, very disappointing that the minister is not here. I really do believe that we need to keep up to date with the vaccine rollout. And you know, that this is something that we requested. And I think that, understandably, with the importance of the situation with vaccines, I think this meeting must continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Keller.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm seconding. Let's continue with the meeting. Thank you very much.
Honourable Members, we note the concerns, but let us continue the meeting so long. Honourable Members, I would want the Deputy Minister to, among his opening comments, to really make a reflection on some of the things that are a concern to some of us. We are going to be getting a vaccine rollout update, and we would like to know clearly, Deputy Minister, with regards to this matter, is it an extended clinical trial? Is a rollout of J&J? We are the team that needs to be so much upfront to be aware what we're talking about. And so we'd like you, part of, if it is not in the presentation, be able to help us to understand this part. The second part that I'm also mandated by another leader who I report to is that we need to understand why is it so difficult to get the department to indicate to us what are these non-disclosure agreements talked about. If it means you do not address it here publicly, because they are non-disclosure, but at least these honorable members, because of the oath that they took, are credible enough to be given that information in a particular way. So I would wish that those issues be attended to, and those things are probably unlikely to be dealt with in the presentation there, but I would like to give you that as a provision that we need to actually deal with that. But the third part is just an information. Lastly, honorable members, I was listening to a very interesting debate yesterday about the Cuban program, and I would wish that sometime we would get the department to come and just brief us on that program. It's quite an interesting one. It was very interesting to listen to the very diverse views of honorable members who were debating yesterday. So I jealously love that program, and I would have loved to hear more. And we are the ones who would really be sometimes be the owners of that program. So with that, I give to the Deputy Minister to start the presentation. Oh, I see there are two hands now. Honorable Ahmed Sheikh Imam, followed by Dr. Thembi Kwayo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Cheche. I'd also like if the Deputy Minister can tell us exactly what is the latest development with the AstraZeneca vaccines. Are they still in the country? Because I'm hearing they are about to expire. Whether they have been sold, have they left the country? And tell us exactly what is the position in terms of that.
If that could also come from your opening remarks, Deputy Minister, I'll appreciate it. Dr. Thembi Kwayo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also appreciate it if we would get information on the digital vibes, communication company with their 82 million, whether the minister himself is being mentioned as being having contacts with relationship of some sort with those. And it's one of the things that needs to be communicated to us, please, because it's something that is worrying. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Thembi Kwayo. If there's a challenge to get a clear explanation on this last one part, that is one part that you will always want the minister to talk about. The Deputy Minister may or may not be able to answer it, but we are taking that up, Dr. Thembi Kwayo.
Chairperson, that is the reason why I said the presence of the minister is very important, because it directly involves him. It's his involvement and not the deputy minister's involvement. But he said he will stand in his place. He will have to give us the status of the matter. Thank you.
Dr. Thembi Kwayo, I'm requesting that it's not going to be the first time that when we have a department, some of the things may remain unanswered, outstanding. If it comes to that level, let us allow that to take place. And we will remain here to wait for the response in the event we do not get an answer. I'm really requesting that because we are saying we do, if I can take it the words of Honorable Wilson, we are concerned that the minister is not there. However, we need to say, presentation. Let us go on nevertheless. The Deputy Minister will cover what he can. Whatever is outstanding, we'll follow up, honorable members. Thanks. Deputy Minister, you can then start.
Thank you very much, honorable Chair and honorable members. Let me again appreciate this opportunity for us to interact with the Portfolio Committee, a very important engagement. As the chair has indicated, honorable members, we are not really starting from the beginning. There has been briefings previously where the minister and the team have updated the members in terms of where we are with the vaccine rollout. Now, just to touch on the specific points which have been highlighted, maybe just again as a matter of context, that the process of acquiring vaccines have been going on for quite some time. We have been in engagement with virtually all manufacturers who have come to the front, those who have made public their findings in terms of the product, the vaccines, which they've been producing, the various three-phase trials from the laboratory to animal trials, and especially the outcome of the third phase three, which is the human trials. All those who have been in the market, who have made public their findings, we have been engaging with them. Now, colleagues and honorable members would remember that the first one to get off the blocks was the Pfizer vaccine. And then subsequent to that, you know, others followed. The AstraZeneca came next, and then the Moderna came in, and subsequently the Russian Sputnik from the Chinese side, the Sinopharm, and also the Sinovac. We know also that from the other side of America, Central America, the Cubans have also been working on a vaccine. Now, it's known information that in the midst of that, as we've been negotiating with the various manufacturers, we concluded an agreement with AstraZeneca, which had delegated the Serum Institute of India as its production company. And we were directed by AstraZeneca to conclude negotiations with the Serum Institute, which is what happened. And we purchased 1 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine through the Serum Institute of India. That product, as the honorable members know, was delivered into South Africa. And unfortunately, a few days after the vaccine was delivered into South Africa, the results of the trials in South Africa, because this AstraZeneca had done part of its phase three human trials in South Africa, led by Professor Shabir Madi. A few days after the vaccine landed in South Africa, the results of the trials, the human trials in South Africa came out, which showed that while internationally the vaccine was shown to be effective, upwards of 76% effective in various parts of the world. But when specifically it was tested against the 501V2 variant, which is dominant in our country, it was found to be not very effective at 22%. That's where the problem came. Now, as a result of that, we had to then look at what is now available in terms of us. Either we had to abandon completely the vaccination program or look at what is possible. And looking at what is possible, the only other vaccine which had been tested in terms of phase three in South Africa and had shown to be effective also against the 501V2 variant was the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which fortunately, as I've mentioned, it was Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, which had done part of their human trials in South Africa. And the J&J vaccine was found to have more than 57% effectiveness in as far as the 501V2 variant is concerned. So we then, looking at that situation, immediately entered into discussions with Johnson & Johnson. And just to put in context again, honorable members, that it was the only other vaccine which had done human trials in South Africa and shown results not general in terms of the main original COVID-19 virus, which is all over the world, but specifically also with these mutations. It was the only vaccine which had also been tested right here at home, including around November and December as part of the trials, where the 501 V2 variant was becoming the dominant one in South Africa. So once we had that information, we then opened discussions with Johnson & Johnson to say, because this has been proven, it's on record, it's been submitted to regulatory authorities, it's been peer reviewed, and there is no question about the fact that these results are not being questioned. So we then entered into discussions with them to say, do you have any stock of this vaccine which has been shown to be effective, including against the 501 V2? And Johnson & Johnson then indicated that as part of their studies, because they were not only doing in South Africa, they have very limited stock remaining in South Africa, which they used for the human trials in South Africa. But they have a lot more stock remaining in various parts of the world where majority of these trials were also being done. And they would be able, if we are interested, to bring in that stock to be used in South Africa while we're waiting for a full registration of Johnson & Johnson, but also while we're waiting for the orders which are being made, because the only order which we had concluded, which was in South Africa, was the AstraZeneca. So the agreement then with Johnson & Johnson was that all those vials, all those doses which were remaining all over the world as part of their trial, they will then collect them, do the labeling, and then bring them into South Africa so that we could use them in the meantime while waiting for further orders of registered vaccines. Now, that is, honorable members, the context within which, as the question has been asked by the chair to further explain, but also as it's a matter of public debate as to whether this is a rollout or this is a research. Now, in essence, technically and legally, this is an expanded research in terms of human trials because of the fact that, one, the doses which we are using, as I've mentioned, are the remaining doses from the human trials all over the world. Those are the doses which we are utilizing. Now, because of the fact that as we wanted to start with the program, Johnson & Johnson had not yet, because it had just concluded its studies, which had shown that its vaccine is effective, including against the 501 variant. But it had not yet acquired registration with the regulatory authorities, including our own regulatory authority, which is SAHPRA. But it had also not acquired registration with other regulatory authorities. Having concluded these studies, it was then submitting all these documents for registration. We therefore approached the regulatory authority here at home in conjunction with Johnson & Johnson, and the agreement was that as long as the expansion of vaccination, which had already started with the phase 3 trials, as long as that expansion of further inoculations would be as part of an expanded study using that same product, then legally SAHPRA would be able to approve that. So that is the basis on which the current program, which is going on, it provides protection for the health workers, frontline health workers, because the vaccine is proven to be safe and to be effective. But at the same time, it's regarded legally as an expanded study, because as we are rolling out, the vaccine is not registered. The documentation for application for registration has been submitted to SAHPRA, as also documentation have been submitted to other authorities. Honorable members will be aware that in the intervening period, for instance, the United States Food and Drug Administration Authority has subsequently given the emergency use authorization to Johnson & Johnson, which is the same authorization which it has given to Moderna, to AstraZeneca, and also to Pfizer for utilization. So in the US, J&J do now have the necessary regulatory approval. In our country, the documentation is with SAHPRA, so SAHPRA is looking through that, and we hope that in not so long a distance, you know, SAHPRA would give the necessary approval. Now, in the meantime, as that is happening, we have been negotiating because the efficacy and the safety, there's no doubt about it. So we have been entering into negotiations for now formal procurement from J&J, including because of the fact that we know it is effective even against the variant, but also we've been finalizing other agreements with the other manufacturers, including Pfizer, but also talking to, as the DG will indicate in his presentation, talking to the others, including Sinopharm of China, Sinovac, and also the Sputnik, and also the other manufacturers. So that is basically the context. I'm aware that possibly during the course of today, there will still be further questions, and we will be able to come back to this matter, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as the questions do come. Secondly, the matter which you have asked me to touch on, and the DG will expand also on this, non-disclosure agreements. Now, Honorable Members will be aware that we are here dealing with private companies. These manufacturers are private pharmaceutical companies. So as much as they are providing very essential goods in terms of a vaccine which protects people, but they are also in business. So, and that's why in acquiring these products, these vaccines, you have to enter into a transaction. It's a business negotiation. Now, during a business negotiation, it is a common practice that while you have not concluded the discussions, many companies during the course of negotiation about how much they can supply, at what price, and they don't want to disadvantage themselves against negotiations they are having with other possible buyers. They then require you to enter into an agreement to say, until we agree, you cannot disclose what we are discussing. So that is the common practice in terms of non-disclosure agreement. So we are aware that as a public institution, as being a government, which is a public institution using public funds, this becomes a difficulty. But we have to navigate the fact that the parties we are dealing with are not public institutions, they are private companies, which then do this on a daily basis with whoever they do business with. So that's the kind of thin line which we have to traverse. So as I say again, the DG will expand on that. But what we have been saying to these companies, just to say to honorable members, that some of the difficulties beyond what we envisage has been where some of the companies then demand that even when we have finalized the agreement, certain aspects of those agreements should not be made public. That's where we have a difficulty, and that's where we have said to them that that's an area which we can't really go through. Once the agreement has been signed, once there's commitment to public funds, we are obliged to report, and at least that's one aspect which we have made it very clear that it's going to be very difficult for us to agree to certain aspects once an agreement has been signed. But again, the DG will say something about that. AstraZeneca, as the honorable member has also raised, I can just say that we are at a very, you know, advanced stage in terms of finalizing agreements for us to pass over the stock which we have through the African Union. The arrangements are quite in an advanced stage. Again, the DG will say more about this, but definitely the stock which we have, which can still be used in many other countries, including in our own continent, especially in the north of Africa, where the variant is not yet there. The difficulty is in our neighbors in Southern Africa, where the variant has already also been found. But so we're at an advanced stage where the stock will be moving very soon, not as a donation, but in terms of as a sale to our neighboring countries in the continent. And yeah, as I said, the DG will say a bit more about that. The last matter which the honorable member has raised about digital vibes, I'm aware that in terms of this matter, there's some work which I think working with the various authorities, the Auditor General and the SIU, so the DG as an accounting officer is in communication with them in terms of information which they require. So the DG will be able to say something about this matter, Honorable Chair. So let me leave it there, Honorable Chair, and with your permission, invite the DG then to make the formal presentation, and then I will come back when we deal with the questions from the Honorable Members. Back to you, Honorable Chair, if you allow the DG to then make the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pasa. May I request Honorable Members that with that, if there are any other outstanding follow-up questions, we take them on with doing the questions, which what the Deputy Minister has actually started with now. Thanks for that. We now allow Dr. Buthelezi, the DG, to lead us in the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. good morning to Honorable Members. Good morning to my Deputy Minister and colleagues from the Department and colleagues from the support staff from Parliament. My Deputy Minister has covered a lot of issues, but maybe before, so that I really sequence issues, the last matter that the Deputy Minister spoke about, the issue of digital vibes. I must mention that there's a few contracts that we've been working on that were flagged by the Auditor General, and we had actually commissioned forensic investigation into them, and digital vibes is one of them. There are other two. Actually, the other one, I've just received the first report that has already been finalized by the auditing firm. So we will be doing a full report at a later stage on these matters. Now, specifically, so I wanted just to make sure that the digital vibes is not the only contract that we've been probing. And we've shared this information with the SIU in terms of the work that we've done. We've actually linked the SIU with the specific auditing firm that is dealing with the digital vibes. I've been in constant communication with them, and they are actually working together now with the SIU. And we do not want to preempt that investigation. And we will, at the right time, when the results are the SIU in conjunction with the forensic auditing firm, when they finalize the work, this will be made public together with the other contracts that we have been probing as a department. Let me then move into the presentation with your indulgence, Chair and Honorable Members. Most of the issues have been covered by the Honorable Deputy Minister, but we'll talk a bit on the update on the vaccination and then the vaccine acquisition pipeline in terms of where we are, what have we signed, what are the doses that are confirmed, and where are we moving as a country. And we'll also touch on the AstraZeneca, which the Deputy Minister has covered very well. I must put a disclaimer, Chair, and apologize that we did circulate the presentation yesterday. However, the presentation I'm going to present, there's one or two other slides that we've had to update. For example, in terms of the numbers, it's a moving target. So I'd like the committee that the numbers that they might be different, because we've already pulled out the latest data from the vaccination system. But I've also added a bit following the questions. I've actually just added this slide just to supplement what my Deputy Minister has put through in terms of the study that was done in South Africa and other countries. of the J&J vaccine. Just to say that it was initially they thought that it was only 57% effective, but when they did the further analysis, it is actually 64% effective, including here in South Africa where we have a variant, and it's 85% in prevention, in preventing severe COVID. This is phase 3A study, and it's almost 100% in terms of all the cases in preventing mortality. So it was actually the good results that came at the right time for us. However, follow that. Yes, we then had an issue where we had a vaccine. Well, we're at a stage where we needed to start with the vaccination after we're disappointed by the results on the AstraZeneca. So we had a vaccine that was safe in terms of phase 3A study, which is an internationally agreed norm. We had a vaccine that was proven to be efficacious, which was excellent protection against severe disease, also with a moderate disease, but also with mortality. Thirdly, we had a vaccine that was easy to roll out in terms of its one dose. It can be stored at the fridge temperature for 3 months, and it's got a shelf life of up to 2 years at minus 20 degrees. The only thing that we did not have with the vaccine was that it was not yet licensed. Now, we had to sit down with the scientists and also with our regulatory authority and say, there's a vaccine. We are almost tailoring off the second wave of the disease, and we want to try and see if we are able to solve the situation and start vaccinating as early as possible. But we've got this limitation of licensing. As a matter of fact, what we call phase 3B studies, others, they call it early access programs. It's not the first time that it's been used. It's been used in a number of cancer medications where the phase 3 trials had found the drugs to be useful in preventing mortality and making people improve in terms of their well-being. So it's been done before. Well, say it's an early access program, is to save their lives. It can be done whilst you're doing the licensing. However, regulatory-wise, you need to ensure that you've got a cover for that. Hence, there was then this agreement that we work with MRC, critically because the trials were done in the country. And we then had negotiations at the global level with Dr. Stoffels, who's the CEO of JLJ, to say, now that you guys are busy with the registration process, do you have any vaccine available that you had already manufactured, probably for trial purposes? They said, yes, we have the vaccine, but it's spread out throughout the world where we're doing the trials. And we need to negotiate with the US government if we are to release it to South Africa. But we must be very careful, because other countries are going to say, why is it only being given to South Africa? So we had to have these negotiations, a number of midnight meetings. And at one meeting, we had people from the offices of Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's the head of NIH at the USG, and they agreed that they can do this. Then we then obviously had to get the regulatory approval as an open label, or what we call early access program, to an efficacious drug, which is still in the process of being registered. So I was just supplementing what my minister, so I had to pull in these two slides and add them in. My apology, it's not part of the pack that was distributed yesterday. Of course, then it's still following our plan in terms of the different phases. Hence, we started with the healthcare workers. One of the main issues we're trying to move fast here is that we are not sure. Our modelers are still working on advising us if there is a possibility of the third wave. So we would like to vaccinate as many people that are vulnerable, including the healthcare workers, as fast as possible as we move forward. So the vaccines, why are we not getting? We've been promised between 300 to 500,000 doses, which we are not paying for because it's not for commercial use. But I will talk about the commercial contract that we've just signed now with Johnson & Johnson. So we're getting them in batches of 80,000 doses Why 80,000 doses? Because as mentioned, the company had to go to all their sites globally and pull all the vaccines that are there into a central point. They've chosen Brussels, I don't know why, but they've chosen Brussels. Maybe it's because they've got good facilities there in terms of pulling this together. And then in Brussels, what they do, they then relabel these vaccines. Because as the Honorable Committee will note, these vaccines, if they were in Brazil, they will be labeled in Spanish. If they were the trial was done in another area, they will be in another language, But also they need to be labeled in line with the approval by SAHPRA of using it in the country. So their capacity is that they can only do about 40,000 per week. Hence, then they are coming in a piecemeal fashion. We first had the 80,000 that came. Last weekend, we had almost 40,000 that came. This weekend, we're getting another 40,000. So that's how we've been working on this. And we then do the proper allocations with targeting the healthcare workers, both in public and the private sector. And of course, one of the requirements in terms of site selection, that since it's still under strictly controlled conditions, they have to be linked to some research sites for oversight and also to comply with the approval conditions that were put in by SAHPRA in terms of this. And we hope that this is going to be resolved very soon. As my deputy minister mentioned, the vaccine has now received emergency use authorization, which is what we call EUA, from FDA. It got in this weekend. And we know that the dossier, SAHPRA is busy with the dossier, and it should get approval not very long from now with SAHPRA. Then that makes it easy because we then revert back to our planned rollout, as now we'll be dealing with a registered a product, not needing strict control under the research conditions. So we still prioritize the healthcare workers, which is very important that all healthcare workers, actually ultimately all South Africans should get vaccination. But we need to have a very a scientific approach in how we prioritize them. With the healthcare workers, for example, we are starting with those who are more vulnerable as compared to the others. Those are the ones working in ICU, in high care, in COVID wards that deal with face-to-face with patients or do some procedures that are aerosol generating, like those who do the testing, but also those healthcare workers, even if they are not working in these areas, but are over 60 or have some comorbidities. So that's what we actually do. So we've identified our sites and also the prioritization based on that. These were the sites where we started. Of course, each site we then looked at the numbers based on PESAL, and we then put in the supply research site where, because in terms of the protocol, the vaccine moves until to that research site, then the research site then gets it to our facility. So we had about two per province for the first, but now we've now expanded it to cover other sites, these are the new sites that we've identified. And the difference now with those sites that have started this week is that we've now started also including the private healthcare sector sites. In the first 20 sites, we only used the public health sector sites, but we still vaccinated private health sector workers in the public health sector sites. Now we are now rolling out, as the Honorable Committee can see, that we've got private sites like Light, St. Dominic's, Medcare, Green Acres. We have Life Rose Park, we have Netcare Mill Park, Netcare St. Augustine's. There's quite a number of them, and we've even put in the doses that we've allocated to the site. But going back into the previous slide, this is how we've allocated the doses, both in the public and the private sector per province, coming up to about 74,000 doses, even though we are targeting 80,000. But we have to cater for a number of issues in terms of wastage and the other issues that we take care of when we do the allocation. Especially if you're dealing with the multi-dose vials, you have to cater for that as a standard. So these are the sites. These were circulated, so I'm not going to spend much time. These are additional sites. So the first round sites are still continuing. We've just added these sites now so that we are able to have a much more a wider geographical reach. Now, based on the numbers that we've allocated, let me, for example, look at Philadelphia Hospital in Limpopo. It's been allocated 880 doses for the next 2 weeks. What then happens, we are able to move doses in between the hospitals based on the workload. For example, over the week, not this weekend, the weekend before this weekend, we started to vaccinate the GPs in the private sector. And we wanted Ian Gauteng to vaccinate them at Steve Biko Hospital. And we had a mechanism to get them registered, let them come through. But we had more than those that were expecting to come arriving on site. For us to be able to deal with that, we did not have to chase those that were not supposed to come back. We had to move doses from other hospitals to ensure that they get that. So this is not cast in stone, but it gives us at least an overall view on how the allocation is done per site, but being able to move doses in between the sites if other sites are overwhelmed. So that's where we are, and these are the sites that are currently working as from this week, including the ones from the first round. Then in terms of the EVDS, which is the electronic vaccination data system, this is a system that we've pulled in together to manage vaccination. Two quick issues about it is that we've got the vaccinators themselves, they register on the system, and these are the numbers that we have. Even the admin trained people who are assisting with the registration on site, they are registered, so we're able to monitor per province how many do we have that are doing the vaccination, so that we can address where we've got lower numbers of this. But this also assists us that on the system, we know exactly which vaccinator has vaccinated a particular person. We're able to follow this one up. And for us, this is very important. But also even on the admin people who are supposed to check, the person when the person is coming in onto the system, we are able to check which admin support person, check this person and confirm the details. This will help us because there are people who are trying to jump the queue. So we're able to pinpoint that, no, this person, the person who actually did the wrong thing here is this admin clerk who's based in this site and is registered on the system. Now, in terms of the numbers, this is a slide that I also must apologize that the honorable members have got an outdated one. As at 18:30 last night, the number was at 91,000 in terms of the vaccinations. And the members will see that we do about 10,000 per day. The rate limiting step here is the number of doses that we have. We are actually, our plan that we have, we will be able to do almost more than 150,000 in terms of what we put down once we have a proper flow of the vaccines into the country. Again, the three provinces with the highest numbers is Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. And this commensurates with the unequal distribution of the healthcare workers. We all know that most healthcare workers are in Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. Hence, this reflects exactly that in terms of the numbers that have already been vaccinated. Again, these are just notes on the system. Most important that I just need to mention that this system has been done in-house by our team working with CSIR. It's quite a team that is very capable. They put this at a fraction of the cost. We've not outsourced it. We've put in a lot of, with assistance of CSIR, a lot of IT governance system in place, protecting information in line with the POPI Act, and to ensure that all is managed appropriately. But also, as mentioned, more importantly, is that the system helps us to manage the demand and supply, and we're able to monitor in terms of the sites. But more critically, in terms of the effectiveness of the efficacy of the vaccine, we've linked the system up with the NICD Central Data Warehouse. Why we've done that is that if someone who has been vaccinated tests positive for COVID in the next 2 months, the system will pick that one up and we're then able to follow up what happened. So we're able to monitor how many people then develop COVID. And then we can then obviously investigate what are the issues because those people would have been vaccinated. Then on the vaccine pipeline, as mentioned by my deputy minister, firstly, I think the three issues that I need to deal with as a preamble is that in terms there's been a lot of noise in the media that we paid twice the amount that the European Union paid. The answer to that is yes, that is correct, but the rationale beyond that is that a number of countries, including the European Union, they paid a lot of money in the research and development of the vaccines, including the AstraZeneca. Basically, that means they paid part of the vaccine upfront. They paid that at risk when they paid that money. And I mean, there is no way that in South Africa would have put in money to the vaccine that we're not even sure that it was going to be successful. But then because they took that risk, then they started to reap the rewards by paying less money per dose of the vaccine. That is the explanation of why we paid 5.35 as compared to about $3 that the European Union paid. But other countries that are in same condition as us, including Brazil, they paid the same amount of money to the Serum Institute. The second issue that we want to deal with is the expiry date of the vaccine. The expiry date of the vaccine is 30 April. This has been extended following stability studies. It has been extended, the Serum Institute working with the regulatory bodies. We have also gotten the extension from SAHPRA. It has now been moved to July. And it is standard practice that the shelf life gets revised based on stability studies that are done. But for us, our issue is that we want to move this vaccine out as soon as possible. Actually, the honorable committee members can note that we were supposed to get the vaccine out, but we were delayed by a minor hiccup, which the team is working on today, because we were trying to have a tripartite agreement between South Africa, the African Union through Afri-Exim Bank, and the Serum Institute. Why the tripartite agreement is because there's a number of liabilities that South Africa has in terms of the contract. We wanted to ensure that those liabilities are properly transferred to those countries that are moving in. Actually, we will transfer them to the African Union, because then the African Union will deal with a number of member states. About 18 countries in the African Union have been listed to benefit from these vaccines. We must also mention to the Honorable Committee that we did have a number of takers in terms of buying this vaccine. We were approached by the Danish government. We were approached by the Dominican Republic. We were approached by a number of other countries. But the agreement was that rather our African countries benefit from this vaccine, especially those countries that do not have the same 501YV2 variant that we have in South Africa, as the Deputy Minister mentioned. The third issue, as mentioned by my Deputy Minister, is the cost. It's not being donated. It's being sold at the same price that we bought the vaccine from. So there is no fruitless expenditure. We are not selling it at a profit. It's exactly the same price, and the agreement says exactly that. Then what have we signed so far? We have signed, firstly, maybe before I come into this, just as a reminder, we've presented this in the past. Our approach to vaccine procurement is twofold. One is pooled procurement, and there are two platforms for pooled procurement. There is a COVAX facility, which is run by Gavi, which is aligned to the, which is a subcomponent of the World Health Organization, where they negotiate contracts for countries just to ensure that there is solidarity and there is equity in vaccine acquisition. They do the negotiations and then allocate to countries, and the country will only sign the agreement with the COVAX facility. Here we've signed for 6 million South Africans and looking at about 12 million doses if we're going for the two-dose vaccine. We signed this contract in December. We paid a deposit of 19.2 million through the Solidarity Fund on behalf of government. And as a matter of fact, we must just also mention that Solidarity Fund was established by government so as to assist in such scenarios, to assist in some of the matter. So the problem with the COVID, initially they should have started delivering to us. They've done their first delivery to Ghana about 2 weeks ago. When they were ready to deliver to us, then we had the bad news about the AstraZeneca, because they were also going to give us AstraZeneca. So their allocation was heavily biased towards AstraZeneca. Then we told them, hold on, guys, We can't take the AstraZeneca as is. For now, then let's consider other vaccines, either the Pfizer or the Johnson & Johnson. So hence the delay that they've not sent anything to South Africa. That was the main issue. However, they have promised us that this month they will start giving us at least 117,000 doses of Pfizer so that we can start. That's from the COVAX facility. Then the second platform that we deal with in terms of pooled procurement is the African Union platform. Now, this is a continental platform that was established by President Ramaphosa when he was the chair of the African Union, where also he wanted to ensure that Africa, there is equitable distribution of vaccines in Africa, but also Africa negotiate as a bloc for vaccines. South Africa is part of that. So there was a team that is chaired by the AU envoy, Mr. Thrive Mosiwa. Our Minister of Health sits in this team called the AVAT, which is the African Union Vaccine Acquisition Task Team. The Minister of Health from Nigeria as well sits in this team. We are also negotiating that we get doses for at least 10 million people within this platform, which will be in addition to the 6 million that we are targeting, or 12 million doses that we are targeting with the COVAX facility. That's pooled procurement. Then in addition to these two pooled procurement mechanisms, we've then approached the manufacturers directly to negotiate bilateral contracts with them, which is Pfizer, we're working directly with them. Johnson & Johnson, we are negotiating directly with them. That's where then the issue that the Deputy Minister mentioned of non-disclosure agreements, and I don't want to add more in terms of that because it was well covered. It's a standard business principle that when we are still in negotiation, you don't then go and say, but you guys, you want to charge us $10 per dose, but we've asked Brazil, you are charging them $8 per dose. I think it's really, I know it is part of capitalism, but it's unfortunate. If we don't sign those contracts, we can't even start opening the mouth and negotiate, and we're under pressure on the ground to make the vaccines available. However, as the Deputy Minister has mentioned, once the contract has been signed, we have, because this is taxpayers' money, we have to say, what have we signed for? For example, now that we've signed with Johnson & Johnson, we can clearly say that we've signed for 11 million doses starting now in February, and they're charging us $10 per dose. This is the information that is now in the public discourse. And we must assure the members that we have a very symbiotic relationship with National Treasury. We meet at a minimum twice per day, and all these contracts, they go through National Treasury before I can sign them, and we get authorization, then I can find them as an accounting officer of the department, just to ensure that everything is above board. And we have our lawyers working with the lawyers from these companies to ensure that both our lawyers from health, but also lawyers from treasury in working with them in this negotiation. With Pfizer, we are at an advanced stage. So Johnson & Johnson signed and sealed 11 million doses, starting February, negotiating for more. COVAX, 12 million signed, waiting for delivery dates, deposit already paid. Now, Pfizer, we have a term sheet for 20 million doses, but they've not, or they've sent the advance purchase agreement. There's one or two issues that National Treasury and our need to give us a go-ahead. As soon as we get that go-ahead, if we get it today from Treasury, we're signing up with Pfizer for 20 million doses. And then again, we can clearly say that they're also charging us $10 per dose. As mentioned, we are still in discussion with the African Union platform. And with the other vaccines, there are other vaccines, Sinovac, Sinopharm from China. We've got the Sputnik V from the Gamaleya Institute in Russia. Then Cuba has also released some vaccines. We're still waiting for some data from these vaccines, but what has been done, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that our Ministerial Advisory Committee on Vaccines has actually given us, they've classified the vaccines into three groups based on the data available to date. Of course, this gets reviewed every week. This committee meets every week. Currently, they say, these are the vaccines that you can use immediately. It's a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it's a Pfizer vaccine, and it's a Moderna vaccine. But we have a problem with the Moderna vaccine. We've tried to negotiate with them. The vaccine is actually 4 times the price of Pfizer. And it's very expensive. Even though it's expensive, but because we are so desperate for the vaccine, we thought that we might negotiate with them because they go up to $40 per dose. That means that to vaccinate one person, you need $80. Whereas with Pfizer, you need $20 because it's $10 per dose. J&J is $10 per dose, and there's only one dose, and you are covered. So they're charging us so much, but they can make the vaccine available in the third quarter. And it is for us not justifiable to pay so much for the vaccine when we get it. If the vaccine is available now when we have the agency, maybe we would negotiate with National Treasury to acquire a few and start. But if it's available in third quarter actually all manufacturers will actually be in full manufacturing and we won't really be desperate for vaccines. And at that time, it won't be justifiable to be paying that kind of a price when you can actually get something for 25% of that price. So that is the issue with Moderna. Those are the first schedule of vaccines that they said are usable. The second schedule are the vaccines that we need more data and more negotiation on. That's the Sinovac, Sinopharm, and the Sputnik V. Actually, there is a meeting scheduled next week. We have had the first meeting with the Russians on this one. We have signed an NDA with Sinopharm, and they are giving us more data through our scientists. We're meeting again with the Russian ambassador next week on the Sputnik V, just to explore how they can make the data available as soon as possible. So those are in the pipeline, and they are being assessed by the committee. Then there is a third group where they're saying these two vaccines, based on the current data that we have, South Africa should not even think about them. There's the AstraZeneca in its current form, unless if they do a booster and provide some data later. Then it's Novavax, which was about less than 50% effective. Those are out of our radar. The others that I've mentioned in the two categories are still within our radar. So basically then, in summary, Mr. Chair, Honorable Chairperson, our program is on course. We are vaccinating about 10,000 people per day. We are on target. Of course, as mentioned, the limitation is the availability of doses. And we are increasing the sites, expanding them, as mentioned, to ensure that we have a good geographical coverage. But should we get soon the approval of the vaccine, as mentioned, our geographical expansion will be very rapid because we've done all the preparatory work for the AstraZeneca. So we'll be able to increase these numbers dramatically. And as mentioned, we are in negotiations for supply for the next 12 months. And we are diversifying our vaccine menu by considering the other vaccines. And for us, what's more important is sustainable and equitable access for the vaccine for all South Africans, irrespective of their ability to pay. And our principle is that the vaccine is free at the point of service. Thank you very much, Chair. I will hand back to my Deputy Minister.
Okay. No, thank you very much for that presentation, Dr. Telezi. I hope that the Deputy Minister is not willing to come back now, but may come after I've actually checked with the members. There are members who have requested to engage with the presentation, and if we can do that now, Honorable members, I start with you. We may come back to the Deputy Minister later on. These following members, one after the other. Honorable Ismail has requested to come first because she has other engagement quite soon. The other member will then be number two, Honorable Chirwa. Number three, Honorable Imam Sheikh. Number four, Honorable Dr. Thembi Kwayo. Number five, Honorable Wilson. Number six, Honorable Dr. Jacobs. Number seven, Honorable Kwakhube. And number eight, Honorable Kela. Please, Honorable members, one after the other in that order. When the member has just said, thank you, I'm done, Chair, then you just switch on your mic and start. Start, Honorable Ismail.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and thank you for the presentation. My first question, where is the local production component of Johnson & Johnson, Minister? Aspen pushed a local production line argument, yet South African Airways flies to Brazil and US to bring these vaccines at huge cost. Please unpack for us, Minister. Secondly, what happened to the Department of Science 2013 plan to start a national pharmaceutical company? Why has there been no progress? Please, if you can update us. Why the National Department of Health is not clarifying to the public that the current vaccination program is a trial conducted by the SAMRC? I mean, you've stated to us now that, you know, it's basically a process, but I mean, when you're talking to public, you're saying vaccination. Next question, in case of serious adverse reactions to the current Johnson & Johnson trial, who will be liable for such? And how much is the department set aside for a possibility of such if it does happen? Can the minister provide a list of all stakeholders who originally started with the Johnson & Johnson ensembles in the country? I'm not talking about now, I'm talking about previously. Which hospitals in the province participated? And has there been any reports of corruption on the sale of these Johnson & Johnson trials? If I'm not mistaken, I remember sometime back in the Free State, something was brought to my attention that, you know, these ensemble trials were actually being sold by private doctors, and therefore I'm asking. Also, please advise the committee who is administering the current Johnson & Johnson trials in the provinces. I mean, who is totally in charge of it? Is it the National Department of Health? Is it an SAMRC? I mean, who is actually responsible? How is the data from the Johnson & Johnson monitored by the department, and how much is this actually costing the department? Is it possible for the committee to have access to the electronic vaccination data system for monitoring? We've also heard that, you know, especially in Germiston, which is you know, very close to my constituency, there's been allegations of, you know, people getting on the system in the wrong manner, and I mean, there's actually on WhatsApp and social media platforms where people are told, you know, get onto the system if you're over 65. It doesn't matter if you're not a healthcare worker. So please unpack for us. But when will the actual vaccination commence, given the status of Johnson & Johnson right now? I'm talking about the actual vaccine, not the trials. And has there been any fault or damage to Johnson & Johnson doses thus far? If yes, please explain. When is the country going to access the actual vaccine? How long is this Johnson & Johnson trial going to take? I'm just asking this to find out when will the actual vaccinations be done, or afterwards, are you going to tell us that the trials were actually the vaccine? And when will we, all of us, including the nation, know the results of the trial of the Johnson & Johnson and any other vaccine? My last question, Deputy Minister, while we have you on the platform, please advise what is being done to address our South African medical students' plight in Cuba. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm having a network problem, so I hope I'm audible. But if I am not or I become less audible, please alert me. Firstly, I want to really render a very deep discontent with the fact that the Minister of Health is not present at today's meeting. And the reason is not sufficient enough, like just to state that he's in KZN and urgent matter arose is not sufficient. It does not suffice. I think you guys should have provided more detail as to why this is an emergency, unless it is a personal issue. But if it is related to the health department, I think you could indulge the Portfolio Committee of Health in much more detail than just telling us there was an urgent matter in KZN, especially because it was literally on TV a few seconds before you guys came on doing an interview with Morning Live. So if you can show up for Morning Live, surely you can show up for the Portfolio Committee of Health, which is the primary reason what we raised in the beginning, that our Minister of Health is too available for media and not for the Portfolio Committee of Health. That is why we arrived at the decision that we must have fortnightly meetings. It was to this effect and this very conversation. You can't attend a Morning Live interview and then an hour later not attend a Portfolio Committee meeting because an urgent emergency came up and not even explain what that emergency is. Nonetheless, let me continue with my questions. Firstly, noting that we got dosages meant for research, as per your presentation today, DG, collected around the world,
how many Johnson & Johnson vaccine trials do we have so far? Not just the ones that have been administered, but today, as of today, can I just get a confirmation of if it's 160K dosages or if it's more? And I also want to know if these research dosages were paid for by our government, and if so, how much was paid for these dosages, or if they were donated? It is concerning also that the minister and the NDOH subverted the ethical process of a trial in regards to firstly informing the health workers, healthcare workers that are participating in this trial, in administrating the application process of participators in the trial, and in informing the nation at large that this is a trial. That it is very concerning that you have not done this in the ways that you're explaining it to us today. You were here almost 2 weeks ago, and you were telling us that you started with phase one of the rollout of the vaccine. You did not cite the issue that is actually the phase 3B trial. And to run away from this grave ethical issue that was not addressed properly in the portfolio committee is very concerning, because it means there's many other issues. In fact, there are many other issues, and I will state them as I continue. Especially because with AstraZeneca, we had issues following the human-based research in South Africa that then came up with the other information that now comes up. I think it was very negligent of the minister of the department of the DG to not having liaised with SAHPRA properly and inform the provinces as well on the fact that this is a 3B trial. And I'm saying the issue of provinces because yesterday the Free State was here and now they were waffling about this issue of the 3B trial, even citing the FDA, that FDA approved it, as if FDA is a South African body when it is not. And the fact that now SAHPRA comes secondary to the FDA. And these are things that your MECs are saying in the Portfolio Committee of Health. I kept quiet because I was really dumbfounded that an actual MEC and the HOD are telling me about the FDA approval when I'm asking about SAHPRA approval. And it's also because you're complicit as the NDOH, as the DG, as the minister, in not having trickled-down information as you should have. The ratio of healthcare workers vaccinated in private versus public hospitals is actually not reflective of the 1585 ratio of the people they cater for. So I am curious on what the criteria is on deciphering the vaccine. These amounts must go to the private sector and this amount to the public sector, noting the burden of the public sector having to care for 85% of our population, and the private sector only 10 to 15%. Can you just clarify us on the criteria that is being used in particular in relation to this? And number four, the minister made a very bold declaration in the third week of April 2020. And I will quote, "We will only fight coronavirus with facts and evidence-based strategies." However, Deputy Minister and the DG, since the minister is not here, this has not been the case. We were refused race-based demographics, despite the fact that they are historically and scientifically proven to be a vital aspect of creating response strategies and measuring the real impact of a pandemic. Furthermore, it is enshrined in our constitution that information held by the state should be accessible to everyone, but you have denied us this information to date. But you are freely giving us information on the immunity of African people as compared to white people in South Africa and all of this, but you are not able to give us the impact of COVID that is race-based, knowing very well that that information is very important, as we have learned with other pandemics, as we have learned with epidemics as well. But you refused us this information, having had the information, because there isn't a single patient that goes into a clinic or a hospital that fills in a form that doesn't click their race, that doesn't tick their race. Your files, or opening of files, requires that. And you know this, but you still kept the information away from us. Anyway, secondly, we raise the concern with the collection of data that is reported by the minister daily. on new infections, number of deaths, etc., especially after the Eastern Cape debacle of 400-something deaths having been misrecorded over a period of a few months. However, SAMRC released a statement linking and asserting that of the 138,000 excess deaths, 85% to 95% of those can be linked to COVID-19. And yet, your daily stats have not been updated to this effect to date. This is misinformation, DG and Deputy Minister. It is fake news, if you may. And it must be resolved because we can't have an entire department, an entire minister, an entire DG, deputy ministers coming to the portfolio committee every 2 weeks and lying. Lying about deaths, lying about excess deaths. And these are questions that we raise as the portfolio committee because they're important and because we see what's going on, but you are not divulging us with truthful information. And you're not divulging truthful information to the society as well. You give us lies every day on Twitter, but you do not make a declaration with there's an issue of 138,000 excess deaths, of which SAMRC has linked 95% of those to COVID-19. And even this, sadly, and currently, the fake news being disseminated by the Minister of NGOH, to your admittance, actually, in this meeting, is the presentation of Johnson & Johnson Phase 3B trial being reported as an actual vaccine program by the department. I've even stated the issue of Free State that was raised yesterday. These are assertions of a national department of health and provincial departments of health. These actions have been deeply dangerous for everyone and only prove that the interest, as per the first quotation I made by the minister, was never fighting COVID with facts and evidence-based strategies. You've rolled out a vaccine that is still being researched, but you're speaking about evidence-based strategies and fighting COVID with facts. But you have not divulged this information publicly. Ordinary citizens have been arrested for spreading fake news, and yet you have an entire ministry doing the very same thing. How do you plan to ensure that facts and science-based response is the primary focus throughout the process and that you answer our questions truthfully and factually? And you don't do this thing of doing PR exercises. When you are caught out, you come to the portfolio committee and then clarify. We've asked you these questions a long time ago about the non-disclosure agreement. We've asked you a long time ago, but now because you're exposed, you come back and tell us that once we've signed NDAs, then we can divulge. This was not the case for the past 2 months. For the past 2 months, you have been refusing to disclose because you signed NDAs. Today, you are coming here to manage the situation because now you're caught in the web of lies and citing NDAs as the reason why you've been creating immunity for your own lies. These are lies. These are fake news. What do we do with an executive that lies? You lie to the portfolio committee. You lie in the news. You lie in your statements. You're liars. What must we do with the fact that you keep on coming to the portfolio committee to lie on important issues? It is absolutely unacceptable. And I strongly believe it is part and parcel why your minister couldn't even give us a valid reason why he's not here in this particular meeting today. And the other thing, you say that you are well on your way of the plan that you have done for the rollout of the vaccine. This is not the case. This is not the case because the plan was to vaccinate.
Chairperson, point of order, please, Chairperson. I am very concerned about the choice of words by Honorable Chirwa and calling our minister, our deputy minister, our department, our DG out as liars. Honorable, I am really, really concerned what we are trying to portray to the public, and I can answer all the points which she has just raised. I think the Honorable looked at the presentation of SAPRA of the 3rd of February before coming up and putting unrealistic and wrongful debates into the public space.
Chairperson, can you rule on the point of order? Because now we're having someone to say me. Please rule on the point of order. What is the point of order? Like, what is the point of
order? The point of order, Honorable Chairperson, about the choice of words, the word used in as a member of parliament.
Honorable Dr. Jacobs, Yeah, don't expand and motivate. We have actually raised the point. Honorable Chirwa, you can't generalize and say you are liars. If you have picked up this, that, and the other, then if you call the person a liar, then you are too general. Please, can you not use that word?
Okay,
there's been an issue here.
Can I come in, Honorable Chair? Can I also come in?
What is it, guys? Come on. Can I just speak and finish?
Can I come in, Chair?
Hold on.
Yeah.
What point is that?
Yeah, on a point of order.
What point is that?
On a point of order, yes. Also to say, I assume the sitting of the Portfolio Committee has the same status as Parliament. You can't just accuse a member of lying and get away with it. And I want the committee, through you, Chair, to take up this with the presiding officers, because this member carries on. And if we say that the sitting of this committee has the same status as Parliament, I think this matter has to be dealt with. We can't be subjected to this kind of vitriolic without any protection from yourself and the presiding officers of Parliament. Thank you.
Can I continue? Can I continue, Chairperson?
Honorable Chirwa?
Yes.
This general statement, I said you are generalizing, I said you are liars. Please do not use that word. Withdraw that.
I can withdraw it. There's no issue, but I will replace the lying thing with misleading information.
Thank you.
Fake news. Yes, because it was fake news.
Okay.
And it was misleading information, and it was not the truth. I take back the lying, but I'm saying you did not tell us the truth. But it is the same effect, really. But I understand the problematization of the word lying.
No.
So I will say not telling the truth. Can I continue?
Honorable Chirwa, you are withdrawing lying without conditions. You're withdrawing and use choice of words. The Honorable Jacobs was correct to say maybe the choice of your words. You can still make your point, but not the choice of words that you are liars. And it's too general as far as
I'm concerned. But I've addressed that.
Withdraw
I'm saying
it without...
it's fine.
Yes.
I'm addressing
continue
that.
Then.
I'm saying it's fine. But I still assert to this effect that they have not been truthful. I'm sure that's the word that you want. Truthful instead of lying. Yeah. The department, the DG, the minister have been coming to this portfolio committee and being untruthful on issues that we've asked questions on that don't only come up now as per the presentation that has come up and that divulging us only now. And secondly, to this effect, you stated that you're well on your plan, but this is not the case as well, because your plan was to have vaccinated 1.5 million healthcare workers by the end of March. Your current rate is vaccinating less than 10,000 healthcare workers a day. How do you then progress from 4,000 vaccinations a day to 1.5 million by the end of March? Clarify the fact that, firstly, phase one has not started. It has not started because we are still doing phase 3B of the vaccine trial. It is not a train smash. It is, in fact, in the best interest of those participating in the vaccine trial. It is in the best interest of the country and protecting those with the kind of information that is being spread about. It cannot be that the Department of Health is not truthful about such information and presenting information as otherwise on public platforms, stating that you started on phase one of the Rural vaccine when you know very well that you're on phase 3B of the vaccine trial. You know this. You are admitting this in this portfolio committee as well. Why do you then cite it as phase one of the Rural program? And also to this effect, update the nation on the fact that phase one has not started. We're still doing phase 3B of the vaccine trial. And phase one will start at a later stage. It will not be a train smash even when the SAPRA comes and approves the vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson. But it does not mean that you have to create immunity for your PR stunt with people's lives, with information that you're supposed to share as the executives, as a department, to the nation at large. You cannot be untruthful about such important information and even remove factual basis of sharing such information as a department. How then are you going to reach 1.5 million vaccinations by the end of March if you are getting 80,000 dosages of Johnson & Johnson vaccines every 2 weeks? The mathematics does not link. The mathematics does not make sense.
Okay. Honorable
so
Chirwa.
Explain that to that effect.
Honorable Chirwa.
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Chirwa. please request, I'm requesting you to talk, go start the roundup. You have taken 14 minutes, 14:14.
All right, I'll wrap up very quickly just now. Lastly, I want an update on what happens when people experience adverse consequences to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine trial. What will be the response of the department to this effect? Number seven, how many traditional healers are participating in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine trial, phase 3B? And the concern that I want to raise, lastly, is that the private sector is testing more than the public sector. And I think this should be concerning for the Department of Health, especially noting that there's been a lot of research done on the fact that marginalized communities and poor communities, which are in South Africa, in the context of South Africa, majority black people, are the ones that are getting infected the most. But this speaks to a larger issue, the fact that healthcare is still inaccessible, that you're not doing the work they should be doing in township areas and rural areas of testing people, especially noting what the kind of research keeps coming up on race-based demographics. We are actually putting out our people for danger because they actually believe that infection rate is around 1,000. They actually believe that the death rate of COVID is around 50,000. SMRC has released a report on excess deaths and all of those. So just fix the issue of testing in the public sector, especially noting that the third wave has been also preempted. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I come in now? I think I'm next on the list.
You are next, Honorable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for that presentation. Now, I want to start off by saying that it is my understanding that the National Department of Health and SEPRA, what they have done is unethical, that they, in normally in a trial, you will call for people to participate in a trial. You will get their consent for them to participate in a trial. And in this instance, you have failed to do that. And it is my understanding that this matter needs to be escalated. And if necessary, some measures need to be put in place to hold you to be accountable for this. Because many of these people who have taken these vaccines are on the opinion that this is a rollout, that as healthcare workers, you want to protect them first. However, what you did not tell them is that they are on a trial. So I must agree with my colleagues there that what the National Department of Health in South Africa has done is totally unacceptable. You have misled the people into believing that this was a rollout of vaccines. That's the first thing. Now, the second thing is this, and I'm not surprised, that SEPRA had not even approved this as a rollout, but as a trial, and even SEPRA failed, neglected, or deliberately withheld this information from the South African public by not having told them that indeed that this is part of a trial. And I'm not surprised at that, and that is why there are a lot more question marks over the legitimacy, objectivity of an institution like SEPRA. And we are still waiting to hear from this institution who funds them, how much have they been funded over a period of time, who do they really account to. And clearly what we can see, SEPRA is not as independent as we think it is. Now the next thing is this, and I think my colleagues have alluded to that as well, is the accuracy of the statistics that we are getting, which we are now told could have run to over 130,000 deaths in South Africa already. But more importantly, Chair, the matter that concerns me is there is some institutions like Discovery and things who is indicating that we can expect another 92,500 COVID-19 deaths from now till December 21. And this is also indicated by Professor Mahdi as a result of relaxing the regulations and the restrictions and going to level one, particularly with the super spreaders that are coming with the Easter wave and things. Then very importantly, vaccines that are going to be coming And I can see we are very optimistic, even though it is loud and clear. And I think the National Department of Health must understand that nobody must expect miracles from them. They haven't performed optimally pre-COVID-19. They've been in a crisis. So you're not going to be able to roll out 40 million doses of vaccine. Let's be honest. You need to give us indications of what you can actually handle, because now with a third wave coming, and if this is going to be a different variant, which we also anticipating, and already this particular Johnson & Johnson's only got a 57% efficacy, in other words, one in two. What is going to happen if that the third variant and any of these vaccines that you already ordered that are going to be arriving during that peak period is not going to work? Then where are we going to go in terms of that? So it seems like that we are treading on very thin ice and at a very dangerous point. And I think we need to look at that. Let's talk about the issue of AstraZeneca. I'd like us to, you all to be honest to us, because we've got conflicting reports from different members in the NGO. When did you first realize that these vaccines were going to expire? Did you negotiate the issue in terms of including expiry when you procured these goods? Now, I've been told, and from what I've heard, Professor Mahdi says, that this vaccine could still have been used in South Africa, particularly with those with most severe COVID disease. Then tell us, why did you not consider using it for those particular people while you're continuing with your Johnson & Johnson? Now, will the issue of expiry, even though I see we push the goalpost now, we can, so in other words, medicines can be extended with expiry dates now. So it means that expiries are not worth the paper it's written on. Now, if that is the case, because my understanding is expiry will still apply to wherever it goes, whichever countries you're going to send, and it's going to be in two doses, so there's got to be a gap between one and two, that the first dose and the second dose. Is it going to really be effective for those people as well? Now, I see and I like what SAHPRA is saying, that in some instances now this is being used because World Health Organization of the FDA counterparts internationally. Why are they not consistent in that argument particularly? And why has your National Department of Health, which I've repeatedly said before, incidentally, not been in the forefront of looking and reviewing the data of this ivermectin, which can also help us side by side with the vaccines? Right now, they said the issue is they're going to allow it on compassionate grounds. They don't have the capacity. They're not even able to deal with the application. Now the group of pharmacists that are taking it to court as well. But what is the reason that even you, the national department, are showing no interest in the lives of our people to want to actually put some pressure to start reviewing this data, which can also, and worldwide, daily there's new evidence coming. You talk about World Health Organization, you talk about FDA, you talk about NIH, you talk about them all. Every one of them are coming up with some new evidence on the efficacy and the fact that there is evidence that it is working. We need to do trials. Only South Africa is in absolutely no hurry. Now, you said you were going to, and I agree with my colleague that spoke to me before this, Honorable Chirwa, 1.5 million doses by the 31st of March, and we're nowhere near that. In fact, some experts are estimating that it will take us something like about 20 years to be able to roll out these things. Now, what are the measures? And also, I want you to tell me as the NDHO, as part of the Command Council, what guidance and advice are you giving the Command Council in terms of what we can expect in April and May? Because I can tell you from what we're hearing, there's a crisis looming in a couple of months. So we went to, let's say, level one, and it looks like we're going to go to level five shortly in how serious the problem is going to be in a short space of time. Then tell me in terms of indemnity. Now, I know you don't want to disclose all the negotiations that are taking, and some of the infrastructure sensitive, maybe with prices and things. What have you agreed in terms of if there is adverse effects or side effects, or it has an effect on some of our so-called people that you have put them on trial rather than rolling it out? What is the position in terms of some kind of protection to those particular people in South Africa that have been at the mercy of the National Department of Health in not having been entirely open to them in terms of what is going on. I will stop there for now, Chairperson, and come back if necessary.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by this question, the one that I would like to concentrate on and give a reason. I specifically asked about the Digital Vibes company in relationship to the minister, and I feel he is the one who could have given us the appropriate number because of his connection to this company. We never asked about the other two companies and we are not interested in them because he's not mentioned there, but he specifically mentioned in this company, and I would like the response from him. I think that would satisfy me, and that is why I asked about that, because it's a problem. And I also feel that as a minister, because he's also involved there, he was supposed to be immediately suspended while the investigation is going on. The second question, and he's not. So maybe you can tell me why is he not suspended now. When the province come and present to us, they complain about the shortages of healthcare workers. But on the same note, I just would like to ask, how will the department, the National Department of Health, ensure that this problem is solved? And secondly, how will they ensure that all temporary healthcare workers are employed on permanent basis to strengthen the health system and prepare for the NHI? And then at the same time, I received a letter, it's a complaint that was sent to me now, to say the Eastern Cape province have sent out letters to the health, to the nursing personnel, Cuban professionals, and community healthcare workers to say their contract is expiring as at the 31st of March, 2021. And they've even stated that no further extensions will be given, which is in actual fact a contrary. Right now we're busy with COVID and healthcare workers are playing an important role. And here is the Eastern Cape province. Please, can you intervene in this regard? And yesterday we were discussing the most important topic about appreciating the important role that is played by the Cuban doctors. And they are also mentioned their contract is ending as at the 31st of March in Eastern Cape province. We believe they came as a brigade of 217 health care workers, and they will leave South Africa as they came, 217, same day, same time, with the same flight. Not the ones that are in Eastern Cape to be sent home. Can you please intervene and provide even a possible plan that can do this? They must do the same as KZN. KZN has extended the period of the healthcare workers with an extra 1 year. Why can't the Eastern Cape province do the same? Please, can you provide an answer? Because I also need to respond to the public that sent this concern. The second one is explain, I mean, there's a possibility. You are also talking about a possible third wave. What is your plan in connection with providing the correct vaccine that will be able to can counteract the third wave? And what are your plans with the lockdown regulations? Because it's the condition of the COVID-19 or the virus that makes us to move from level 1 to 10, 10 to whatever levels that are that we move through in South Africa. So there's a possibility of that. With what are you saying about it, as it may be in connection with the vaccines that you are ordering? And it's high time as a department to work in conjunction with SAPRA. SAPRA says this, you say that. You say this to the community, you come and report something different to us. I think it's you have to sit down somewhere and just reflect on where you come from, what is it that not just doing a rush things like you are doing, because right now it's no more the phase, it's expanded research. The next thing, it won't be expanded research, it will be something research, another name that will be derived from World Health Organization to say no matter cancel phase and do it with us. It's confusing. You are confusing the country. As we are confused, what about the public that we are representative? We usually don't have the correct answers to answer their questions because of our department. Definitely that is not understanding what they are doing. How much has NDOH spent on the Cuban Brigade thus far? And we just would like to know. And has there been any joint plans with the education department given the reopening of schools? And the last question, it's not about the vaccines, but it's something that is happening in the department. To say each and every year, the hospitals around in the country receives some internships, but they don't do the same thing. Some hospitals will give their internships a stipend. Why some don't give them a stipend? Why don't you create a balance to say, if you have some internships in your hospitals, this is the stipend that should be paid, and it should be the same, because all these students come from the same institutions. They know one another. They share them. Like, for an example, the O.R. Tambo Memorial in Gauteng doesn't pay any stipend for the orthotists and prosthetics doctors that are working there. So I just would like to know how can you help here so that a balance should be created and the same stipend should be received by this the doctors there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in the main, a lot of my queries have been covered by the colleagues ahead of me. There's some things that I would, however, like some clarity on. One is the Cuban Brigade. We are now getting our figures, our COVID figures nationally on a daily basis. Practically for weeks now, they have been below 1,500 nationally. In light of this, what is the situation now with the Cuban Brigade? Are they going home? Are we going to continue to keep them on? And, you know, what exactly will they be doing now that we are in this situation? And obviously, we would like to know, and it was raised by Dr. Tembekwa, what they're actually costing us on a monthly basis. I have a concern with the vaccine rollout in terms of healthcare workers and for offline areas, and I have raised this before. We have, you know, like, for instance, if I'm from Limpopo, the vaccines have been delivered predominantly to Polokwane at this stage. However, you know, we've got areas like Palabora, Ephra Mogale, Elias Motsoaledi, areas in the Waterberg that are over 2 hours away from any hospital. So vaccinating those healthcare workers has obviously become a serious issue. Those healthcare workers want the protection of the vaccines. Hospitals are unable to transport them to a vaccine center to get done. And obviously, you can't take people off the front line and, you know, send a whole lot of them at one time to be vaccinated. It's a concern. I'd like clarity on how you're dealing with that. There was news about the fake vaccines picked up in Gauteng. There was a quick response to that. Not only was it fake vials of vaccine, there was also fake masks. The perpetrators were arrested very quickly, and for this we are grateful. However, it has highlighted my concerns, and I've been raising this for several weeks, including with the provinces, about disposal of our vials. My understanding is that on the completion, once every vial is empty, it should actually be broken and properly disposed of. Can you give us clarity on this? It is going to be an issue in South Africa. People are desperate for the vaccines. People have been scared of COVID. They want to get vaccinated and carry on with their lives. And the fact that this has already raised itself in South Africa, and this will be one case of many, I am sure. How are we going to stay on top of this, and how are we going to ensure the correct disposal of the vaccine vials that we are using at the moment? And lastly, Chairperson and Committee, the situation with field hospitals. We know that some of the field hospitals are already being taken down. Are all field hospitals being taken down now? Where are they? If they're not being taken down already, why not? If you can give me some clarity on that. And just finally to say thank you to the Deputy Minister and Dr. Buthelezi for availing yourselves today. I'm sorry that the Minister is not here, but I think that, you know, the update is appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we're in a very bad situation where members have had previous presentations and then they do not go back and read those, or when they do not understand those presentations, they come here on this platform and they raise the type of questions to which they do. They put the questions and the concerns as if these are new things, new worries, new concerns, but then they also misconstrue what they say on this platform. It is important for one to address this matter because it is quite dangerous to put what they do out there as a form of misguidance by the department or by the ministry, which is not true. So if one does not know what one is supposed to know, or you do not go back and you go and recapture what was put to you before, then this is not the platform to come and show your ignorance. That is a big concern, because that ignorance portrayed here is what is then put to the public as being the truth, and it is far from the truth. Now, we've had many presentations for the past year on the same topic. That is how long COVID has been with us, and the members, all of the members here have had presentations by the minister, by the department, by SAPRA, and by many other entities, which by now should have given them a better understanding of what these things are really all about. And I want to put this in terms of two presentations which were done. One was by SAPRA on the 3rd of February, just a month ago, where they spoke about three things. The three things were the guide to the COVID vaccine, the slide on that. There was a slide on the approved COVID-19 vaccine studies. There was a slide on the pharmacovigilance reporting requirements. What that speaks to is that here are certain vaccines which had been approved, and there are vaccines which had not yet been approved. My question would be, would it have been proper not to have done in the context of a 501 YV2 variant having been discovered in South Africa, would have been proper of the department to have done absolutely nothing, because the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at that stage had not yet been approved by SAPRA. But it had been shown to be efficacious, it had been shown to be safe, it had been shown to be effective against mild to moderate disease, and 100% effective to prevent death and admission to ICU. In that case, what would the honorable members have said then if the minister and the department had done absolutely nothing to try and bring some vaccine to South Africa? You know, the uptake as shown by the healthcare workers of 80,000 vaccines really shows to us the importance. Does that not mean it is consent? Does that not mean that it is approval? Now, I'm certain at the point of receiving the relations, there would have been consent documents. There would also have been the necessary documents for people to be explained what adverse reactions they are to experience and where they should go to have those treated and how those would be recorded. So that in itself is a call for people to participate, and I'm speaking here about two speakers ago who raised that particular question. Now, I'm very concerned when members come here and misconstrue things, and we need to really put this straight, and I'm hoping that the department would also put this straight.
I'm also raising a point of order. No, you don't have to counteract what we are saying. You are not belonging to the department. You don't belong to the department. You are a committee member like us. Let the department answer for themselves.
But if you do not say...
We don't need your reaction here.
When you misconstrue, honourable members,
ask
your questions.
Honourable members, let us give Dr. Jacob a spot. I have not heard him mentioning names of
point
people.
Of order, Chairperson.
I have not heard him mentioning this. I have not heard him mentioning names.
But he's reacting to our questions.
We need the department to respond, not him. Point of order,
Dr. Chembewayo, if one member of your party is raising a point of order and you are also speaking, I can't give him space. Let me listen to Honorable Chirwa. What's your point of order?
My point of order is that Dr. Jacob just retracts the statement that we are presenting misconstrued information. We are saying that the department should not have said there's a vaccine trial. A vaccine rollout when it was a trial, and they're
admitting this
to this effect. You can't say we're misconstruing information. That is
Honorable
Chirwa. Honorable
Chirwa, that is not a point of order. That is your other view that you have, not a point of order. Please.
It's not a view. The department says it's a phase 3B trial today, but they didn't say that 2 weeks ago. It's not a view.
Leave him to continue. Your view is bringing another view. Let's listen
to
him.
It's not a view, Chairperson. It's a fact. It's a fact. The department admitted this today.
Honorable
Chirwa, not a vaccine.
Honorable Chirwa, let's give the member on the platform to continue making his points without interruptions.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Continue, Honorable Dr. Jacob.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's exactly what I'm talking about when members do not understand the difference between a phase 1 rollout and a phase 3B study. These are running concurrently according to my understanding, and it had purely to do with the fact that phase 3 studies had been done in South Africa. We have participated in those studies. The vaccine has been shown to be effective, and I have explained in which ways in South Africa against the 501YV2 variant. Now, it's important to note this because the facts which we put out there need to be correct, and I'm purely trying to correct some members here on what they put out there. That these are concurrent things which then, as I have explained, the healthcare workers were willing to participate in. Yes, there will be results of this, but these would only add to what we already know in terms of the efficacy and the safety of the vaccine within South Africa against the variant that we have in South Africa. Now, it's important also to know that SAHPRA did say to us that they do different types of investigations. One of those is to look at what is already approved, for example, in other countries or in other unions, etc., and then use that data in order for them to do their studies and then to be able to approve particular vaccines. That is what said. So the importance of the FDA approval is really of great importance. importance to South Africa and for the use of the vaccine within South Africa. There should be no question about that. Now, on the AstraZeneca vaccine, it was also studied in South Africa. It was found that we had challenges with the new variant and the efficacy of the AstraZeneca vaccine with regards to the new variant. And then it was withdrawn. In the condition that it was withdrawn, I applaud the department and the minister for having taken this forward and have brought a vaccine to South Africa that seems, or according to the studies, will work, will be important to the public safety, and it will help us in South Africa that we put this COVID challenge behind us. I just wanted to give those kind of clarities, Chair. And then I have one question. So to date on the total vaccines, I've actually counted what the Director General has put forward. So we're looking at 34 million doses of vaccines, or rather 34 million people to be vaccinated in the near future. I still see a shortfall of about 6 million doses. And I would like for the DG maybe to answer what their plans are going forward to address that shortfall, and we're really hoping that we'd be able to acquire all of those doses within the near future. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm here, sir. I'm here. Sorry, I'm unable to switch on my video, but I will continue nonetheless. Chair, I mean, I think that there's great confusion here just with regards to the differentiation between the trial and the actual rollout and the various phases of the rollout. So I think perhaps instead of throwing jabs at each other as members, I think that perhaps it's an opportunity for the department to clarify, because if members of the committee themselves are slightly confused about which is which, whether or not, you know, is the first phase of the rollout in its entirety a trial? And if so, are healthcare workers very much aware of it? And what will be made of the second and the third phase of the rollout? When will the differentiation be between the trial and the actual rollout of the vaccine? I think it's important to note that, I mean, you know, you shouldn't blame people who don't understand your argument, but rather maybe improve your argument itself. So I'll just maybe just ask the DG and perhaps the Deputy Minister to maybe clarify where that is, because we are also getting questions you know, from members of the public exactly what this is. And I think if we are, as members of parliament, equipped to deal with those questions, then we will be able to squash any misinformation that there might be out there, as Dr. Jacobs has essentially stated. Because if you look at the presentation, I mean, there's clearly a differentiation between the rollout and the Sisonke study. And so if we can just get clarity on that, I think that would be useful. Then secondly, Chair, considering the fact that you know, there's been varying reports about the rollout of phase two of the vaccine and the third phase of the vaccine, and it's also good to note some of the agreements which have been signed and some of the doses that we'll be seeing coming through in the next couple of months. But I mean, the last that we heard in terms of a timeline was that some of these will come onto the stream in the second quarter of the year. So I just want to understand what then is the department's preparation around the possible third wave, which has now been said to be possibly going to be happening around May or June. And also, how will this coincide with the second and the third vaccine rollout, bearing in mind that obviously the first vaccine rollout is relatively simple, considering that you are targeting healthcare workers. The second and the third phase of the rollout is a lot more difficult, because these are not people who are basically a captive audience for you to reach. You've got to make sure that your infrastructure is well and good running so that you can be able to reach people as much as possible. So what is the timeline considerations of the third wave that is anticipated, as these things are not a perfect science, but also how then do you make sure that you are starting to reach people very quickly for the second phase of the rollout? Particularly considering the fact that, which is kind of my third question, the fact that it's good to see that the distribution sites have been added to, but ultimately, I mean, how are we getting the primary healthcare system ready to be essentially distribution nodes in the second and the third phase? So if I could just get a sense of the preparedness of the rest of the health system in a very much localized fashion on how we'll be rolling that out. Then I do also have a question of clarity, Chair, with regards to the no-fault compensation fund or the contingency fund, which was announced by the Minister of Finance during the budget speech. He announced that there would be a 9 million rand allocated for the vaccine rollout, the acquisition of said vaccine, and 1 million rand for the marketing and communication. And then there was an announcement of a contingency amount, which would essentially be there to cover any mishaps or adverse events in the vaccination process. How is this being managed? And so who is funding it? I mean, is this something that is being funded through the Department of Health? Is this something that is being funded through Treasury? How is it being funded, and where exactly are these funds being sourced? And what kind of sort of adverse events is the department anticipating that this kind of fund will be looking to resolve? And then the last question, which is related to the money issue, Chair, is around the 9 million and the 10 million in total. I mean, does this then mean that the department has had to recalibrate and readjust its targets of vaccinating 40 million South Africans by year end? Because considering the delays, of the vaccine rollouts and the fact that, you know, which were some of them were unforeseen circumstances, of course. But then does this then mean that we've had to recalibrate and sort of readjust our timelines in terms of the 40 million South Africans target, which was set by the department? And if not, is the money allocated by Treasury going to be enough for that kind of acquisition of vaccines and rollouts to be able to be done by year end? So if I could just get some clarity on those questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Kela, and the last one would be Honorable Sukers.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report from the department and also from our DM. Chairperson, I'm very happy that we have this session of getting feedback from the minister, and the minister is always briefing us as a portfolio members of health so that we understand and you know where we are as a country and also as a portfolio committee members. But I'm very disappointed, Chairperson, with the behavior that we are showing South Africans, particularly the behavior of the other colleagues, particularly the EFF. But
Chairperson.
Is
point of order, Chairperson.
Criticize whether we are doing
point of order, Chairperson, please.
But we'll continue to serve the people
you
of
you should be concerned that your minister is doing corruption, not that we are questioning corruption here. You should be concerned about that as a portfolio committee member.
Chairperson, I think the platform is mine.
Continue asking your questions.
I'm still busy. Can you help me?
Don't talk about EFF here.
Chairperson, we really applaud the good work that the department is doing for us and also to save the South Africans. We saw actually our healthcare workers and doctors are very happy so far, which and also we believe that we'll continue with the good work that we are doing to save the life of our people. Chairperson, the Department of Health has further purchased procured additional vaccine doses which are to be brought into the country on a specific date, which we welcome the report, and also we are looking forward to make sure that we reach the 67% of population as we have promised our country. Chairperson, the other issue is that our minister is being transparent to us as a portfolio members. And I'm happy and covered by Dr. Jacob what he has just said to us as portfolio members. I think we need to be more educated, Chairperson, especially so that at least we understand. Because time and time we get briefings. The department is giving us reports so that we go through as a portfolio members. But I'm surprised today as if it's a new thing. And also they are also surprised that we are misleading the country. And we are not misleading the country as a portfolio committee or as the Department of Health. So that one, it must be noted, is them who are misleading the country because they don't understand actually the issues that we are faced. But the minister did brief us about the J&J, what is going to happen, and also the rollout. But my question, Chairperson, let me leave them because they don't understand issues. They are here just
to stop saying that to Ella.
Can we be respected in this portfolio committee?
Honorable Kela,
please.
Honorable Kela, please make your point now.
That's not a point. They always do this. Honorable. They come and respond to our point.
No. Honorable Kirwa, we are not a Sangoma.
Honorable,
don't make your point now. Honorable, go then.
I will leave you with that.
Please don't say that. Please refrain from saying that. The same applies to you, Charity.
My question, Chairperson, to the department. How does the department will monitor the current J&J vaccine trial? The other one is being asked about the issue of our healthcare workers. As we also know that we got a complaint in terms of the staff shortage. I'm not going to repeat that, Chairperson. The other question that I want to ask, Chairperson, is that what is South Africans' agreement with J&J with regards to the vaccine trial, Chairperson? Those are my two questions that I want to ask to the department. But so far, Chairperson, I think we are doing very well and we are responding. And I believe that we are going to reach the target. The department is going to reach the target of making sure that we vaccinate all our healthcare workers in our country, even our citizens. So far, I'm saying forward with the good work that we are doing, despite of the criticism that we are getting from other people who are negative. But thank you very much for the good work that you are doing as a department led by our minister. Our minister is doing the good work, and we are appreciating that at least he has forwarded the apology, and our deputy minister is here to make sure that he respond on the issues, because they are working together. They are making sure that they respect the people of South Africa. Hence, our deputy minister is here in our meeting to make sure that he responds. And also, we can't blame the minister because he's doing very well. He's doing a good job. We've seen he's been at the forefront with our president to make sure that they save the life of South Africa. But we'll just ignore all the negativities that they are saying, especially the EFF. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Kela, Ivali Gashi, please. Okay, Honorable Sukers.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity as I raised my hand a bit late. I think I firstly just want to emphasize what was said before. I think what is evident is that we were wrong-footed in terms of the vaccine rollout, and there has been a interchanging use of words between vaccine rollout or, you know, a vaccine trial. And we cannot ignore the impact of the lack of clarity that in the beginning and I'm now struggling to say whether rollout, but the beginning of giving the J&J vaccine to health workers, I received messages as well in which healthcare workers were uncertain now, are they part of a vaccine trial? You know, and so it needs to be addressed. And I think we need to depoliticize the concerns of South Africans, because if we do not do that, we actually contribute to what is happening with COVID-19, that most people, and we need to provide the type of guidance that is needed. And I think just from a leadership perspective, we need to interpret the mood. So I think the department needs to own where the message to South Africans has not been clear, and specifically to our frontline workers. And it is a must. We cannot politicize this thing. We need to show the kind of moral integrity that is required in this time, and that it goes for every one of us. So I would ask, please, that if that the department can own that, we have to acknowledge that clearly there has been a strategic maneuvering in order to ensure that in place of the AstraZeneca, that there now be at least vaccinated. That it is clear. I mean, it's evident. We can see that. And we need to say thank you to the people who are working hard to at least make sure that everything doesn't fall, the bottom doesn't give under us. And so I want to acknowledge that and just say that. Then I just want to ask the following question, Chairperson. The South African Council of Churches has requested, submitted a request that pastors and ministers that are that be considered frontline workers and who are not opposed to being vaccinated with the J&J vaccine, that they be considered as frontline workers for this, and that they also be prioritized for vaccination. Is consideration being given to that request? That's what I would like to ask the minister, the deputy minister, I'm sorry, because ministers of the gospel are central to addressing the impact of COVID-19, and they are continually exposed within our communities to people that are sick. So if the department could answer that. And then secondly, the South African private sector is a world leader in strategic sourcing. Other countries have sourced vaccines early and effectively. Does the department use a strategic sourcing approach? And who in the department, in terms of profile or function, is responsible for strategic sourcing strategies and negotiations with pharmaceutical companies? Are these persons strategic sourcing practitioners? If they could just give me an indication on that. And then lastly, in view of the fact that a mass vaccination rollout has not yet begun and that we will face a third wave, according to some scientists, SAHPRA and the DOH must, despite initial evidence, must focus on treatment and care. I'm sorry, let me just say. So despite initial evidence of the efficacy of ivermectin, SAHPRA had to be sued to allow its use. So what steps will the minister and what will the deputy minister, I'm sorry, I directed it to the minister, what steps will be taken by the department and to ensure that potential treatments receive the same priority as approval of vaccines? And I need to stress that, Chairperson, because we are now at the certain that there will come, you know, possibly another wave. So we need to know whether the department is open for other treatments to receive approval so that we could address this. And then in terms of, lastly, in terms of the people with comorbidities, such as people with diabetes and hypertension and other comorbidities, is the department in preparation for what's for where we're heading in the winter months? Are they upscaling communication to get people into treatment and get those comorbidities under control? I will stand with that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Deputy Minister and DG, before you also answer, let me add my three questions. This committee is made up of some scientists. Some of them are medical scientists, but I do not doubt your explanation, but I would really request that maybe, so that this matter is buried once and for all, consider in the next meeting you come to update us to bring along Professor Glenda Gray, who's the principal investigator on this J&J clinical trial. She will be like an independent, but the person who has been could answer those, some of the questions you are answering on her behalf, of course, in the country. But I think her presence can add value as a president of the MRC, as a principal investigator of this J&J. Please consider that in your bring if you come next again to brief us. The second part, I remember when I was a general practitioner, I was making my own money. I'm just wondering now, if I line up and get vaccinated, is there anything that actually I need to pay as a general practitioner, not just me, but in the country? How are they contributing into the pool of resources to buy these vaccines, including the private healthcare sector? I'm also wondering, we will be probably in vaccinating other workers who are very key and critical to be vaccinated, health, mine workers. How are we accommodating them? Are the mine owners contributing to this buying of the vaccines? The third one, I would want to be informed, probably that is the reason why we're not getting a bit of a noise there, that the workers, healthcare workers who are currently being vaccinated are signing their consents, and they are comfortable and happy with the consent that they are signing. They understand, and the consent explains everything on this matter. The last part, we hear of a third wave. I cannot remember when you anticipating this third wave to come in, but just take me through the timing of the vaccination, especially with the healthcare workers and people with comorbidities and those above 60. When you get vaccinated today, when does this thing start protecting you? Is it after a week, after 2 days, after 2 hours? So how many of these, how big a pool of South Africans you would want to vaccinate at least before the third wave? Because I imagine you are trying to protect people getting severe COVID-19 and deaths. And therefore, do you think we are on track with at least those critical pool of South Africans who must be vaccinated before we get to the third wave? And by that time they have been vaccinated, will there be sufficient protection in their bloodstream to make sure that they get a mild COVID-19. Please take us through your responses, Deputy Minister and DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members for the many questions which have been asked. I'll start, and then the DG, and if he wants to allocate other team members, will indicate. Chair, let me just again start with the matter which you right in the beginning asked me to speak to, which has been repeated again in more detail, kind of nuances by various members, different angles, in terms of what members still feel that it's not clear. I'll try again, and I'm sure the DG, when he comes in, could also add. Just in terms of what is happening now, is there research, is there trial, is there rollout of vaccines? Again, just to trace back to say, our original plan, as honorable members are familiar, by this time, we should be rolling out vaccines which were properly ordered, procured, delivered to South Africa, received by the President and Deputy President and the Minister, and ready to be rolled out in terms of our plans. Phase one being for healthcare workers, 1.2 to 1.5 million healthcare workers, and then going into phase two, all frontline workers, including people with comorbidities, and then going into phase three, where everybody above the age of 18 will now be vaccinated. That's the original, the master plan which we have. Then the million doses are delivered, and then we get the news, as everybody knows. As a result of a study, a phase three study done in South Africa by a team led by Professor Shabir Madi, doing the trials, the third phase trials on the AstraZeneca vaccine in South Africa, adding to other studies which were being done in other parts of the world. And they then released this result a few days after this vaccine to say, the vaccine which has been delivered is not effective on the 501 virus. The 501 V2 variant of the COVID-19 virus. And then what do? We can't proceed, and despite this setback, simply just say we're going to ignore and we're going to go and just roll out. I've had comments by Prof. Madi saying about the fact that this has proven, it has not been proven to be effective in terms of mild and moderate, but that is not the case in terms of severe illness and death. But that's a very difficult kind of thin line kind of area, the very gray area in terms of one. The main message which comes through is that this vaccine is not even the minimum which is scientifically required, which must be above 50%. It doesn't meet that requirement of at least above 50% in terms of efficacy. So how do you then proceed simply on the basis that that does not apply in terms of severe illness, ICU and death? So that's, we had to take a decision in terms of that and say we'll rather on the side of caution and not proceed in this regard. But at the same time, we received a report of a study similarly, which was happening at the same time from the other manufacturer of vaccine, which is Johnson & Johnson, also having had trials, including in South Africa, as there's been other trials in other parts of the world, with a different outcome, which says, in terms of this vaccine, it is more than 50% effective, against the very variant which the other vaccine has not shown to be effective against. So looking at that, we say there is a window of opportunity. Within this dark cloud, there is a silver lining in the sense that this other one is showing in its studies that it is effective. And therefore, we then have to immediately start talking to the one which is showing to be effective, which is Johnson & Johnson, talking to them, the owners of the vaccine, and also the local South African which is led by Professor Glenda Gray, which have been responsible for doing the trials in South Africa. Now, at this stage, unlike the AstraZeneca, which we have received the results of, by that time, AstraZeneca, the reason we could bring it into the country was that it had already been registered with various authorities and at an advanced stage also of approval. In fact, by that time, they had submitted all the documents and therefore SAHPRA approved the fact that we could bring stock into the country. J&J is nowhere in that progress at that stage, not even anywhere else in the world, including their primary residence country, which is the United States of America. So the only option which is open to us is to making sure that South Africans who are priority in terms of our own plans, phase one being the frontline healthcare workers, the only way in which those frontline healthcare workers can get protection from a vaccine proven to be effective is to make sure that, I mean, the only avenue open is through the expansion of what has already been approved. I want to emphasize this, especially to Honorable Sheikh. What is already approved by SAHPRA? Remember that for J&J and AstraZeneca to do human trials in South Africa, they had to apply to SAHPRA to get approval to undertake this human trials in this country. So they've got the approval already. So J&J, similarly as AstraZeneca, they already have the approval for the human trials. Now, this one has proven within that limited trials which have been done, the normal trials, which is the numbers which are acceptable in scientific world in terms of how many people you need to enroll in a human trial. 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 in a country. When you look at the vaccine manufacturers, and then when you do the totals, AstraZeneca had done under 20,000 throughout the world. The others, I can't remember the total number for J&J, but AstraZeneca was the lowest in terms of total number of human trials. Others were about 30,000, 40,000, up to 50,000 in terms of cumulatively all over the world. So the approval is already there for the trial, for the human trials. So this vaccine is already, in terms of this report which you are receiving, is as a result of vaccine injections to South Africans, and therefore we're able to have this report. So this is the avenue available. So all that needs to be done is to approach SAHPRA to say, can you approve that we expand what we have already approved? You have already approved this vaccine to be tested in South Africans. It's been tested. It's been shown to be safe. It's been shown to be effective. Now, the only other way in which we can expand that protection is to expand in the form of what you have already approved, which is the study, the trial or the research study. So in other words, and we've been very open with this, honorable members, I think those who are really listening and checking will know that this has been very, we've been very open in this regard. So it is a very unusual, you won't find it anywhere in other countries in the world. So that's why I'm not blaming members in terms of what they say is the confusion, because we took a very unusual direction in order to make sure that a product which has been proven to be safe in our own country in terms of the challenge we are having, and also effective in our own country in terms of the challenge we are having, we can use that benefit to expand the protection to our frontline healthcare workers in the process of expanding in terms of the legally available route, which is the expansion of the study. Now, when you look, as I've mentioned, all of them, you will find that whether you go to Sinopharm or Sinovac or Sputnik or any one of them, Pfizer, you will find that at the most, in terms of their human trials, they would not have done more than 50,000 cumulatively throughout the world. Now, with this expansion, what is therefore unusual is therefore the fact that we are targeting through this window to reach more than 500,000 more South Africans, which will mean what will be different at the end of this will be more than 500,000 healthcare workers in the front line will have been protected. But secondly, it will be unusual in the sense that therefore, when J&J looks at its study of human trials, whereas every other company will have about 40,000, maximum 50,000, at the end of this, by the end of March, in its books, Johnson & Johnson would be able to quote a figure of more than 500,000 in terms of its own human trials. But the difference is that the additional 500,000 were an expansion at a time when the actual efficacy and safety of this vaccine were no more in doubt, but it was to expand. But let me also just add, honorable members, to say, even as we now move into the vaccines which are procured as a result of final approval by various authorities, including our own authority, even during we can refer to as the actual and normal rollout of the vaccines, even during that time, that's why we have the EVDS, so that information of those who receive will be collated, so that any side effects will be reported. So in a way, there's going to be continuous study, even at the time when these vaccines will have been registered. So now also just to mention that because of the kind of strict regulatory way in which this expansion, now whether it's a question of, to me, it will be terminology, semantics, the fact that you're expanding the provision of this vaccine to more than 500,000 people, which is unusual in terms of a study, but this is the only way in which this protection can be provided. Whether you want to call that a rollout or you want to call that a study, you are not wrong either way, because, you know, in terms of normal human trial studies, you don't even go up to 100,000. You go, I mean, as I've said, you can go and refer to any of these other trials. You won't find anyone even approaching 100,000. So whether you want, then when you go far above that into 500,000 more plus, you know, do you regard that as a rollout? Do you regard that as a study? Either way, I would say you're still correct. But the difference in terms of what other members have raised, the message maybe might have not been loud and clear. Maybe we need to try more. But I can assure you that the people who are coming ahead, who are coming forward to receive this, understand it very clear. More especially because of the fortunate part of it is that at this stage, we're not going out to members of the general public. These are healthcare workers, many of whom understand this on a daily basis, how this works. But over and above that, I have gone through this on Wednesday morning at the George Mukari and Sfago Makhatu University. It's very thorough. It also works very slow because of the nature of how it is done. It's very thorough. They go through, in terms of they must ask you questions. You understand that you're part of a study, part of the Sisonge trials and so on. And by the time that injection comes through into your shoulder, you have been thoroughly taken through and confirmed that indeed you understand what you are going through. So I can assure honorable members, you can go and ask those who have the 91,000 people who have gone through. They will tell you that they've gone through all the steps and there is no shortcuts. So I disagree with those who believe that there is any unethical behavior. The South African Medical Research Council is fully responsible. As a Department of Health, we are just beneficiary partners in terms of the agreement which we have reached with J&J. The South African Medical Research Council is fully in charge. Even at George Mukari, where I was on Wednesday, the professor of microbiology, who is also working under the SM Medical Research Council, and also a director from the Medical Research Council, are the people who are in charge, who determine who, you know, if you're not qualified in terms of what the approval of SAHPRA is, you don't get the injection. So I can assure honorable members that definitely. But we do the best we can. South Africa is governed by law and constitution. If there are honorable members who seriously believe that there is unethical conduct, you know where to go. All of us fall under the constitution and the law. And if indeed there are members who are convinced that the Department of Health, J&J, and South African Medical Research Council are conducting an illegal, unethical business, they have all the right to can approach the various, you know, legal authorities of the country to can challenge that. And I'm very confident that indeed we will not be found to have violated any law and any ethical conduct. Research and medicine is regulated by various laws and ethical conduct. And I'm very confident that when that is done, we will not be found to be fault of any. The Medical Research Council will not have agreed. And I agree with the chair. You can bring in Professor Tender Gray, president of the Medical Research Council, under whose auspices this is happening. And I'm very confident that she would not have taken any chances in terms of if maybe. I understand that honorable members, we are all here in this platform, we are all politicians. So there's a lack of trust, you know, amongst politicians. But bring in the specialists, you know, the academic specialists, the heads of these institutions, question them, and they will tell you that indeed they have not taken any chances in terms of undertaking this project. In terms of other issues, I'll just go through quickly, and the DG will come in. In terms of, there was a question about whether Aspen is doing local production, that we've been saying that Aspen is going to do local production. As we have indicated, and members saying, but this vaccine is being brought from other parts of the world. Indeed, as we have explained, this is not yet in production. Immediately now, once SAHPRA has approved in terms of the documents in front of it, independently, once SAHPRA has approved, Aspen, representing Johnson & Johnson as a production company appointed, will start production in South Africa. And the vaccines which the DG mentioned, the 11 million, which we have already agreed with J&J once the approvals are in place, those, amongst others, will be from locally produced by Aspen. So I think that point is quite clear in terms of where J&J stands. I think the DG will deal with other issues. Of how many J&J doses, as we have said, now in terms of the current trial period, just around 500,000 doses will be made available, but we are procuring, already agreed, with 11 million. And I think I've dealt with the issue of ethics and information to the people who have received the vaccine very thorough, and I've got no doubt about it. The issue about the honorable member, who I also had to come in, I mean, really is very unfortunate, the kind of language which the honorable member was using. But I can say clearly here that we stand by what we have said, that whatever we say, we rely on science. And the allegation that we're peddling fake news, honorable members, is totally unfair and indeed unfounded. I must say, totally unfounded. The number of deaths announced. This is a scientific system. If you go everywhere else in the world, you will find that there is confirmed laboratory proven deaths in terms of COVID-19. All over the world, there will be a report which indicates so many deaths this week, this month, today, confirmed laboratory tested COVID-19 deaths confirmed. Now, then there are other deaths which happen from other causes, and this does not arise only during COVID-19. Throughout the reportage, either by Stats SA, MRC, annually, quarterly, per month, there will be deaths which will be reported, total deaths in the country, per month, per quarter, per province, which Home Affairs have in our country. In terms of those reports, when both the Medical Research Council and Stats SA report, there will be deaths which can be ascribed to natural causes or also to unnatural causes. Those which are ascribed to natural causes, there will be those which can be ascribed to specific ailments, TB, HIV, heart disease. Annually, you will find those reports. But there will then, in the total number of deaths in the records of Home Affairs, within natural causes of death, there will be deaths which can clearly be ascribed, although they are natural, they are not by violence, accidents, or crime. But they are natural, but they can be ascribed to heart disease, to tuberculosis, to HIV, to anything, although they were natural. It's not known as to what caused those deaths. And that's where then the issue of the studies, Medical Research Council, then will come in with what is called excess deaths, over and above what can be allocated to specific causes within the natural causes of death character. So now, in the current situation of the pandemic, all that is an expansion of this work. It's not unique. It's not only in 2020 and 2021. It's happened. You can go back to all records throughout, you'll find those records. So in terms of this, now the Medical Research Council and those who are looking at this area will then look at the reports, confirmed, unconfirmed, natural, and then look at the studies to say in the normal year, in the natural category of deaths, these are the normal kind of areas. TB kills so many, diabetes kills so many, heart disease, kidney disease, kill so many people, and do an assessment in terms of that. So in their own assessment in terms of the natural causes of death, what they are finding is that there is a variance between what we report as laboratory confirmed COVID-19 deaths and other deaths which are far above the annual normal causes of natural deaths. And they then ascribe that to say there is no other explanation. We must assume that because there is no record as to what is the cause. This, in our view, in terms of scientific mathematical extrapolation, at least in terms of this trend, so many should be ascribed to COVID, although we can't prove it because they have not been tested. So we can't venture when we report on a weekly basis. We can only report on what is laboratory confirmed. That will lead the other part of natural deaths, which cannot be clearly ascribed to a particular disease, we leave that to the researchers. It's their duty, the Medical Research Council, to report on those every year. And therefore, honorable members should not be confused by that. We can report on that because on a daily basis, we can only report on deaths which are confirmed by a laboratory in terms of PCR or currently also in terms of the rapid antigen, which is approved as an instrument. Anything above that, we leave it to the researchers who do mathematical extrapolation and who can then say, even though there were another 1,000, we believe that out of that 1,000, 800 of those we believe could have been to COVID, even though there is no laboratory test. So I just want to lay that to rest. And if honorable members then get confused by that and call it the fake news, just do a little bit more understanding. And then I think when Professor Gray is here, you can ask him more about the science. You can ask Professor Abdul Karim as well. There are other people who deal with those things. That's not our terrain. Our terrain is to report what is confirmed by laboratory. Let me leave that, honorable members. Again, I think I've dealt with the fact that the honorable member who said that what we are doing is not approved by SAHPRA. It's not true. I've already dealt with that. SAHPRA had already approved the human trials by J&J, led by Medical Research Council. So,
but that is what I said, that SAHPRA approved the research.
Honorable Chair, can I be protected? This honorable member is interjecting.
Point of order, Chairperson.
You must not disturb our TM, please, Chirwan.
Point of order,
respect our TM.
Can I be protected?
Respect our TM.
Honorable Chirwan, this is not the way to behave in the meeting. You don't just
okay,
without
can I raise a point of order?
No, I'm not going to allow you.
No, I'm responding to your questions. You can't have a point of order against an answer. Honorable Chair, the issue of, I think, the third wave and possible further variants, that is the science of what we are dealing with, this invisible enemy we are dealing with, the nature of viruses, they mutate, as the scientists have said to us, the fact that there might be another, more difficult variant which can give us challenges. We can't say that it is going to happen. There's going to be mutations. What the scientists are telling us is that what we can hope for, what is the normal trend, is that usually as the viruses mutate, they get less and less virulent. They get less and less lethal. So we're just hoping that unlike this variant which came on our shores now and other places, so that next time when there's more mutations, like the normal way in which these epidemics go, that they will be less lethal and they can be they will cause less severe diseases. Now, in terms of when will the third wave, we don't know, but it is anticipated that as the virus adjusts, mutates, that's why we're talking about possibly estimated around maybe as we go to the next winter. So our role is to really that's why we emphasize, even as the vaccination is happening, all other precautions, washing of hands, sanitizing, social distancing, avoiding crowds, all those things, that they must still be in place because we can't rely purely on the vaccine. But at the same time, our plan is to make sure, that's why as the DG reported and as you'll come back, we want to ramp up as quickly as possible. We're pushing all the time to get more and more vaccines quicker, so that by the time when we reach our May, June, winter period, we will probably have covered a lot of ground. Now, the kind of extrapolation which some members are putting to say, if we are now at 91,000 and so on, how are we going to reach 1.5 million? We definitely, that was our original plan, but with the kind of challenge we have reached with AstraZeneca, we definitely we're not at this stage even hoping to reach the 1.5 million by end of March. Our target currently is, having exhausted the current doses of J&J, we will be over 500,000, hopefully having received also some Pfizer vaccines. We will be and receiving some further doses at least by the end of March. What we're anticipating is that we will be somewhere close to 700,000. So we probably will be half of what we had hoped for. But as we now ramp up, as we receive more and more doses, we hope that we will definitely be able to catch up. The DG will deal with some of the issues. Maybe Chair, let me just stop here and then with your permission, invite the DG to come in and deal with some of the issues. And if there's still some areas which I need to come back to, I can come back. Over to DG.
Yeah, hold on. Before the DG comes in, let me come in here. While you were making your responses, Deputy Minister, there were two other members who wrote to me and said they'd like to make a quick follow-up on what you have just been saying. That's Honourable Imam Sheikh and Honourable Kwakhube. Please, members, it shouldn't be too long. Make those follow-up short, not more than a minute each. Okay. Not more than a minute, Honourable Sheikh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, that's exactly my point I've been making, and will you agree with me? I just want to know yes or no. Do you agree with me that thus far, SAHPRA has given approval on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for the purposes of trial? You've admitted that you will then be making application to them to allow it for a rollout as well, number one. Number two, will you agree with me that even with the AstraZeneca, you did not get approval authorization from SAHPRA when you ordered it? When it was arriving in South Africa in the process, you made an application, then they authorized it. And then immediately after that, found it was not effective. Now, based on all that, will you blame us as ordinary South Africans that we cannot trust and rely on SAHPRA and the processes that you are following? Because it looks like SAHPRA is not as independent as we think it is. Right now, you are rolling out something as a trial and only approved as a trial.
I'll give you a minute. Honorable Kwakhube.
Chair, I will literally be 30 seconds. I just want to ask the Deputy Minister. So, Deputy Minister, you talk about how the terms are being used interchangeably, rollout or trial. But I think, sir, it's quite important for the distinction to be made that, and perhaps it is, you know, it's our lack of understanding, but if we can just get an understanding, the entire first phase, rollout of the vaccine, of the J&J vaccine, is in effect a trial. Of course, you've made an input as to why it was already approved by SAHPRA, because they also relied on other international bodies. But it is in effect a trial, and it is only when we get to second and third phase that the department will then apply to SAHPRA for an expanded rollout of the vaccine, where actually then we get to start the vaccine rollout.
Okay, thank you. Deputy Minister,
let me deal with that before the DG comes in. There's some noise. Yeah.
Honorable Sheikh, mute.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just deal with that quickly. With Honorable Sheikh, the issue about distrust of SAHPRA, I don't think it's actually warranted, because as I've mentioned, I have myself said that this is indeed the approval which they have given, which we are using now, which was already existing. All that we needed is approval to expand what they have already approved in terms of a trial, except for the fact that it's expansion at a time when the product has already been proven to be effective. And therefore, that's why it was not difficult for SAHPRA to approve that, because it was only an expansion of what they've already agreed upon. In terms of the fact that they approved the AstraZeneca, we had to apply to SAHPRA in terms of, because they had all the documentation, and the AstraZeneca was already approved by other authorities and have been proven overall, its efficacy had been proven. It was just final touches, but in terms of the SAHPRA, but they had to approve that we can bring the product into the country. But they were not wrong, because the issue of the variant was not the principal issue in terms of whether any of the vaccines is effective, but it was the original variant of the virus, which was the determining factor amongst all the other vaccines, not only in terms of South Africa. But what was helpful for us was simply that, because the two were also tested in our county where there was a variant, that's why there was additional information which came later. So I think it will be unfair then to blame SAHPRA for not having waited for the seeing whether the vaccine is effective against the variant. Now, in terms of Honorable Kwakhuze, the issue here is that the J&J has submitted its documentation to SAHPRA for final approval of a situation where once the regulatory approval is obtained, then they will be given the authority, the right to can then trade in South Africa and supply any authority or any institution which would apply for their product. Then they will be having a product which is approved. So at that stage, they will then be able to trade with us with an approved product. You are correct in that regard. But in terms of what is, remember that the phase one was always health workers. So when we receive now, whether it's from J&J or from any other manufacturer, an approved vaccine, it will be adding, remember, we're not going to go back. So phase one will be already halfway because having used the expanded study, those who would have already been vaccinated are not going to need another vaccination. So we will be already halfway in terms of that phase one. So in a way, the expanded study is, practically speaking, contributing to our phase one, even if it's under the context of a study. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, DG, please, I've asked that we are taken to 12:30, if you can, because the time must still be 12 o'clock, but I'm just still bleeding. Start and see where how far we can go, but we won't take it beyond 12:30.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My Deputy Minister has actually covered quite a lot of ground in most of the questions. So where we sit now, I think there are very few questions that are just pointed, which we'll deal with. One, are we paying for the current vaccines on the Sisonke trial? The answer is no. They are being donated to us. Actually, whilst it's also we cover the issue of liability, the reason why they are being strictly managed in line with the protocol is because Johnson & Johnson and MRC have had to take insurances because that's not yet part of the rollout. So even our no-fault compensation will come in once we deal with the commercial vaccines, starting with the 11 million that we've already signed for. So that is covered in that area. Who is responsible? In terms of the SAHPRA approval, MRC must oversee this process. Even though when it goes into our facilities, we've trained our own vaccinators that do the actual final injections, but MRC takes the overall responsibility as we move in. The others, the others like the private and public and private sector allocation, how are we working on that? Dr. Pillay, the DDG, is here, so he's going to deal with that. The issue of adverse events, as I've mentioned, there is actually the follow-up to watch if people have had side effects, what we call adverse events following vaccination. We are monitoring that. We have not had serious side events such as anaphylactic shock, which is the worst form of adverse events. But again, as mentioned, if there are any with the study, there are insurances that the MRC and J&J have taken to that effect. And then I think the issue of AstraZeneca has been dealt with. The issue of ivermectin is still being reviewed. We are in court, so there's a number of court cases that we're still dealing with currently, so we wouldn't want to comment much as the matter is in court. From a number of different groupings that are there. On the issue of the shortages of healthcare workers, that is a serious problem that we are facing as a health sector. It's not a new problem. It's been there for a long time. So, but also we don't think we'll be able to resolve it very soon, as honorable members are aware that we are actually taking a huge cut on compensation of employees, even in the next MTF. So we're trying to see what we can do with and what we cannot do with. So we are going back to the drawing board to try and work on these issues. The issue of the Eastern Cape that was raised by Honorable Thembe Kwayo, I am going to follow this one up with the head of department. I tried sending her a message. Unfortunately, we don't have details on it, so we are unable to comment on it. But I do promise we can get this and get through our parliamentarians and officer to deal with the issue. Similarly, the spending on the Cuban Brigade, we can provide that information through our parliamentary liaison officer, because we did not come prepared for that for this meeting. The issue of internship standardization in terms of stipends, again, we are going to follow this one up with our human resources and really get more details so that we give really an informed response to the honorable members. I think this also covers Honorable Wilson. The issue of the sites in Limpopo, it's a general issue in the whole country, as the Deputy Minister mentioned, that the approval of the Sisonke program is under very strict conditions. So it actually limits our rollout geographically, though we're trying our best to ensure that we are able to deal with that to reach as many as possible. But as soon as we have proper approvals in terms of the authorization of the drug and we revert back to our original plan, this should not be an issue. And we hope this will happen quite soon so that we deal with it. In terms of field hospitals, our understanding is that most of the field hospitals have been taken down or decommissioned. I mean, the last one to be decommissioned was the Gauteng one, the Nazrec. I will just need to check with the team, but Dr. Pillay might come in when he answers. The UTNH one where the VW actually erected that one might still be up, but there was really an issue that was raised in the meeting with the MSCs in the NHC that now we really need to decommission most of these hospitals. And then we then had a second wave, then some came in handy to deal with that. So we'll give a full response after we've really checked with the provinces on where we are with that one. Then the other issue that I really want to talk to that was raised by Honorable Chira, I'm sorry to jump in between, is the issue of the provinces and the healthcare workers not being informed. It's rather a bit unfortunate because what we are going, what we did as a department, even through the minister, the deputy minister, the National Health Council was called. And this was presented thoroughly. We had everyone in the meeting. In addition to that, so National Health Council, that's where all MECs, all HODs sit, and the whole Sisonke trial was taken through, and Professor Glenda Gray and her team went through. We took questions, and we thought that we had covered that. But in addition to that, I personally chair the Committee of Heads of Departments. We've had several meetings with them, going through this as the heads, administrative heads in the provinces. So we are very comfortable that we've covered that. But in addition to that, we had a meeting with all the unions in the health sector. We went through this, we spent time into such an extent that the union leaders volunteered to go and take the vaccine so that they can encourage their own members. And we had to arrange a special session at Steve Biko Hospital for the union leaders to go and take the vaccines. So it's unfortunate. We will follow up with the heads of departments if there is still that narrative going around that they don't have information, because I think at the national department, we've tried our best to ensure that they are actually part and parcel of what is supposed to happen in terms of this trial. I've just seen the honorable member has put in that where she can send the letter from the Eastern Cape. The letter can be sent to our parliamentary liaison officer, Mr. Joe Hartler, who I think the members normally deal with, or it can be sent directly to probably the secretary who can share it with Mr. Khatla. Then the next one that I'd really request Dr. Anban Pillay to come in, it's mostly the questions from Honorable Gwarube and also Honorable Jacobs, looking at the doses, the shortfall, the trial, the vaccine pipeline, the readiness of the system, the Norfolk compensation and the recalibration of our plans as we move forward. Then just to round off, the issue of the faith leaders has been addressed from Honorable Member Sukers. They will be part of phase two together with the taxi drivers, the people in hospitality industry, essential workers that includes police, teachers, and this has been presented in the past to the committee, and of course including people with comorbidities. I think the Deputy Minister has responded to the fact that obviously in terms of the third wave, we don't have concrete data from our modelers, and our target is to ensure that what it means that we can actually ensure that we cover as many people as soon as possible before we get the third wave. And then I see the another question from the Honorable Member Tembe Wayo, that it can also be sent directly to dg@health.gov.za, dg@health.gov.za. And then from Dr. Domo, the chair, the issue of, firstly, it's the same issue of the projections and the third wave, but there's an issue that how soon does the vaccine work? In terms of the data that we have from the Sisonke, the projection is after 28 days. That is the data that was released, that after 28 days, the vaccine showed effectiveness, then it puts in the different categories. In terms of payment, currently for the Sisonke trial, everyone that is being vaccinated is not paying, including people from the private, because we are also not paying for the vaccine. But when we start with the commercial vaccines that will come through and we do the rollout, we have a system in place where we will have a cost. People pay either through their medical aids, but the principle is that at the point of delivery, people should not pay. But there is a mechanism that we are putting in place, and we do have Dr. Tulare, after Dr. Nbanpile, will actually just speak a bit on that reimbursement model that we're going to use for people to pay for the vaccines, those who are on medical aids and those who are in the private sector. In terms of the mine workers, the mining companies, a similar principle. We do have meetings. Actually, 2 days ago, we did have a meeting with the Minerals Council. They have actually offered that they want to also assist with the procurement of vaccines. So through Business for South Africa, we have a work stream and a 3x3x3 where we sit with them and do the planning on how they can participate in terms of ensuring that, that they are able to pay for their vaccines, which they will be able to pay for. Even the private hospitals with the commercial vaccines, they will be paying for those vaccines, even though they would have been procured by government. There is a mechanism that Dr. Tulare is going to talk about as we move on. But currently, with the rollout, with the Sisonke that we are implementing, the healthcare workers in the mining sector, 3 of the acute hospitals have actually had their people vaccinated, so that is being taken care of as we move forward. Then maybe through your indulgence, Chair, I'd like to request Dr. Pile to come in, and then Dr. Tulare, and then we'll be done from our side. Thank you very much.
Sheng, before Dr. Anpan Pile, Ukwarube is Kwahube in the actual Uarungesi Zulu, Ubizwange Ukha in Sikosa. Okay, Ukwahube. Go ahead, Dr. Anpan Pile.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I'll try and deal with those questions that DG assigned to me. But I thought it's important to also just explain some terminology in healthcare research that may be helpful to understand. The first term that we use often is the term trial, and the other term that we use is study. These two terms are not necessarily the same, and I'll explain why. The term trial is used when we are testing an intervention. And when we do that, as in the case of a vaccine, we are comparing a new vaccine that we don't know how well it works or doesn't work against placebo. And when we do that, we call that an interventional trial, and we are comparing it against placebo because we're not sure whether it works or not, how safe it is, etc. Once the trial is over, and you then have results that says the vaccine is effective and it's safe, then you cannot go back and do another trial on that same drug. You have to do a study because now you've already proven that this vaccine works. And in the case of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the phase 3 was about trying to prove whether the vaccine works and whether it's safe. And I think they did that quite effectively through the global study, which had over 43,000 people. So once they finish that, they usually go and register the product. Because the product was not registered and we wanted to have access to it, the only way one can have access to it is through a study, because those doses that they had available were the doses that were determined for the study. Now, what's the difference between a trial and a study? In a study, there is no placebo because you already know that the vaccine works. In fact, it's unethical to give people a placebo when a product actually works. So in an observational study, you give everybody a product and you just observe how effective it is in the general community. Very often you would roll a product out and do an observational study at the same time. So the two terms are not necessarily mutually exclusive. They are interchangeable and can be used. And there are a number of examples in healthcare where we have done a rollout and a study at the same time to answer a particular question. And in this particular context, I think the Ministerial Advisory Committee was well placed. The other question I just wanted to also address was the one on excess deaths. I think it's important to appreciate that the deaths that happen in our healthcare facilities are the ones that are identified as COVID positive and are deaths as a result of COVID, which we then report on a daily basis. In addition to that, there are clearly people who die outside of a healthcare facility. And what researchers such as the ones at the MRC do, and globally as well, is ask the question, are there more people dying now than they were dying previously when there was no COVID? And if the answer to that question is yes, they then say, what is the extra deaths, or what they call the excess deaths? They then postulate that these extra deaths are due to COVID, because it may be that the other deaths are due to the normal issues such as road accidents or cardiovascular disease, etc. But you cannot be specific and say for sure these are definitely deaths that are due to COVID. It's speculated. So if you were to go to them and say to them, so can you tell us whether Anbin Pele, who passed away, died of COVID or died of another condition, they will not be able to do that, because that is just a postulation about what they think is happening. Every country does that, because in every country, not everybody dies in the healthcare system. Some people die at home. They're not even aware that they have COVID and they pass away as a result of that. We obviously cannot capture those excess deaths in our reporting because these come through much later and you don't actually know how many are excess deaths. This is done post the reporting and a result of modeling exercises, not looking through some report that says that certain number of people died as a result of COVID or not. On the question about the AstraZeneca vaccine, let me say that the AstraZeneca vaccine was only shipped to South Africa after approval from SAHPRA. In fact, the Serum Institute was very clear about that they would only put the vaccine on an aircraft as soon as we show them the approval from SAHPRA for the vaccine to be sent to South Africa. So the AstraZeneca vaccine was not sent and then we obtained approval. The vaccine was still in India. We had to get approval, demonstrated to the Serum Institute that we have approval now, and then only would they ship the vaccine to South Africa. In terms of the questions about the private sector allocation, I think it's a good question. So I think it's important to appreciate that between the public and the private sector in terms of populations, it's correct. 85% of people use the public health system and about 15% use the private health system. However, in terms of healthcare workers, the picture is very different. There are much higher proportions of healthcare workers that are working in the private sector. So in order to make sure that the allocation is equitous, a higher proportion of doses have to be allocated to the private sector because that's where people are working and they're at risk as a result of that. So that's the reason for the allocation. In terms of the adverse reactions, we've seen no serious adverse reactions to date. All of them have largely been what we call reactogenicity to vaccines, which is part of the normal process when you get any vaccine. Pain at the site, fever, headache, those are probably the key symptoms that people have experienced as a result of the vaccine. We've had no anaphylactic reactions to date relating to the vaccine. On the question about the doses, I think it's important to understand that the Johnson & Johnson vaccines that we currently have as part of the phase 3B study is a maximum of 500,000 doses, which J&J has committed to us. Our healthcare workers in phase 1 are clearly much more than that, estimated to be about 1.2 million. The balance of those vaccinations will obviously can't be done by the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Even the commercial batches from Johnson & Johnson will be available a little bit later. So we're going to have to use the Pfizer vaccine in order to address those gaps. Going forward in quarter 2, as the DG had indicated, both Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson will continue to supply vaccines. And between those two, we believe we would be able to run an effective phase 2 campaign in terms of vaccinating those that are within phase 2. Those would be our essential workers, those living or working in congregate settings, the elderly and also adults that have comorbidities that pose a high risk. I think in terms of our readiness to roll out the vaccine, remember that when we were planning to roll out the AstraZeneca vaccine, the provinces had developed very detailed plans about how they were going to deal with this, the sites they were going to use, who were going to be the vaccinators, how the vaccines were going to be distributed, etc. As soon as these Johnson & Johnson vaccines are finished and the Pfizer vaccines will be here, we would then revert back to that plan as such. And we believe that provinces would certainly be able to reactivate that. In fact, we've already started that discussion with them in order to make sure that they are ready to deal with that. On the question about the no-fault compensation system, what is it? So the World Health Organization, as well as these two manufacturers in particular, Johnson & Johnson as well as Pfizer, have indicated that in order to make sure there is good uptake of vaccines, one has to provide some sort of a compensation system so the public have confidence if you are vaccinated and you experience an adverse event that you are protected in the healthcare system. And so a couple of countries have had no-fault compensation systems previously, and the research seems to suggest that the uptake for vaccines is much better because the public have greater confidence when that system's in place. So what will it do? The no-fault compensation system is meant to compensate for the healthcare costs that will be incurred, assuming there is some adverse event from a vaccine. Hopefully that's not going to happen because in the trials that didn't happen. And the fund will then compensate for those healthcare costs as well as any other costs that may be incurred as a result of exposure to the vaccine. So in order to do this, there needs to be a structure that's set up with a expert panel of people who must make a decision as to whether these adverse events are linked to the vaccine. And if they are, then there needs to be decisions about how will reimbursement for those healthcare costs happen and whether there's any disability, how those will be funded, etc. And that detail will clearly have to come out in a structured process from government around regulations, etc., for us to be able to put this in place. And I think the National Treasury would work very closely with us to put this in place. In terms of our question about the budget, I think it's important to recognize that this is the initial budget that we're receiving now. But Treasury has made it clear to us that if the pace of vaccination increases and the budget needs to increase for one or other reason, during the adjustment budget period, there will certainly be an adjustment. This is a priority for the country for a number of reasons. And so we should not be too preoccupied with what the exact budget allocation is. We will focus on making sure we acquire as many vaccines as soon as possible and put them into people's arms so that we can get over this pandemic. And they will focus on making sure that the budget is available to make sure that this is a smooth process. Thank you, DG. I think those were the questions I needed to respond to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Then the last one will be from Dr. Tulare on how we're going to recoup the cost from the private sector and from people. With your indulgence, Chair, then we will be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm struggling to get my video to switch on. If I may be excused for not switching on my camera, it's refusing to switch on. The last question that I have to respond to is in relation to whether people are going to be expected to pay those that are in the private sector and how are the funds going to flow. So what will happen is that the vaccine firstly will be administered free at the point of care, and those that do not belong to medical schemes will be funded through the fiscus, and the fiscus will ensure that the vaccines are purchased and distributed to sites that are expected to vaccinate through our entity, the BioVac, that is partly state-owned. For those that belong to medical schemes, what will happen is that BioVac will supply the vaccines to the private sector providers that are going to be vaccinating, or even the public sector. But what will happen is that there will be claims against the medical scheme that the members are belonging to, and the schemes are going to pay for the vaccine using a mechanism called the single exit price, and this will go back into the fiscus through BioVac to enable the fiscus to purchase more vaccines. For those that are not on medical aid and wish to be vaccinated in the private sector or allocated to be vaccinated in private sector sites, there will be an administration fee that is paid to those that are vaccinating in the private sector, a quantum that has already been calculated, and it's in line with the cost of administration and the cost of any other consumables that may be used. And we have estimated this at between 50 and 60 rand per episode. And then what would happen also is that if ever there are other private sector role players, such as the mining sector, that wishes to vaccinate, they will also be purchasing from the BioVac into their facilities, and they will reimburse the fiscus through paying to the BioVac. Should they wish to put in additional funding into the purchase of vaccines beyond the facilities that we are mentioning, such as the mining hospitals, there is a process that is currently underway between the Department of Health, National Treasury, and Business for South Africa, where there are going to be a final determination of how the private sector will put in funding to augment the fiscus into purchasing the vaccines. And the discussions are quite advanced, and National Treasury will also be guiding the process on how these funds can be deposited into the pot that the fiscus will be using to purchase vaccines on behalf of the entire population. The most important thing is that even in those activities, we would want to see the prioritization and protocols that have been set out on who gets vaccinated in phase one, is, and who gets vaccinated in phase two and phase three is, so that we ensure that those that are more prioritized are not left behind, and also to ensure that we use our electronic vaccine data system to implement this prioritization. What is important also is to ensure that as we implement the electronic vaccine data system, there's certain information that is collected and it includes whether you belong to a medical aid or not, and this will be captured into the vaccination process, and we will match this with the database that we get from the Council for Medical Schemes or the medical schemes themselves. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you very much, Honorable Members, and thanks to the Department. We have just gone past the time that we thought had been allocated up to 12 o'clock by 23 minutes, not too bad. But I've requested that we don't go beyond 12. If I may request, if there are any parting shots from the Deputy Minister, otherwise we are going to release them now.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. No, just to thank you and members for this opportunity, and assure all the Honorable Members that we value your contribution and the points which you have made. We have done our best to respond, but if there is any further, as the DG has indicated, other matters can be submitted to the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Mr. Khatra, and we'll do our best to respond where maybe some of those matters are not fully covered. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. May I request that even though you have sufficiently covered this process in the next update, which comes in a fortnight's time, you do bring along, I'm happy you were agreeable to bring along Professor Glenda Gray. It may just add one or more additional information, but even to consolidate and give legitimacy to you being the recipient of the programs that they are actually involved in. Thank you very much. Can we have our honorable members remaining behind us for 2 minutes, thanks. We are released, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. We are leaving.
I see Mr. Khatla, you can also depart. Okay. Honorable members, I now would want to confirm that we are in liaison with the House Chair to really come and make an address and engage with us. But I think just as a reminder, one member did allude to this. Our meetings are an extension of the National Assembly sitting, and therefore the rules that apply there would and should apply here. Just to remember that, colleagues, as we go forward. We do not have the minutes of the last meeting because we just held it 2 days ago, so they are still compiling that. We hope to have them next week. Next week, Honorable Members, will have two items on the agenda. And I was just checking with the secretary that she has already sent this. One, which I needed to, we are going to have SAPRA. SAPRA bringing their annual report. I do envisage a situation where members should and will also engage SAPRA with regards to all these other issues. Are they ethical? Did they do that properly? This, that, that. So I think it would be interesting that I'm indicating to you that SAPRA is coming in next week to give the annual report together with your engagements. The second item, I don't know which one comes first. The second item or the other item that we'll have next week will be the members amendment bill, private members bill that was brought by Dr. Tembekwayo. The honorable members will then deliberate that on based on the input that was made by Dr. Tembekwayo, and number two, the report that came in from the Department of Health. So those are the two items honorable members will have for next week, Wednesday. If you do allow, can we bring this meeting to a close and wish you have a good weekend, and do look after yourself, honorable members. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair. Can I say something? SAPRA is not coming next week. Next week is the NHLS. National Health Laboratory Services. SAHPRA is coming on the 17th. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, I'm confused. Yes, we have NHLS also, their annual report. Okay, the other way around. NHLS next week with their report, and they also, we would want to engage them in terms of the this testing and all that things. SAHPRA, the other week, honorable members. Thank you. Okay. How bad? You're the one who's not paid. Manjhabe, you're lala.
Alibongwe.